Welcome to National Liberty Alliance's weekly call. Today is April 1st, 2024. We broadcast live every Monday from 9 p.m. to 11 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're listening live over our radio or another network and you would like to ask a question or make a comment, you can go to nationallibertyalliance.org and click on a weekly call for instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. If anyone would like to email a question, you can send your questions to questions, it's plural, questions, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Please support our business partners. You can find their banners on the right-hand side of a website of which the proceeds go to support NLA's effort to save our republic. Also, please support NLA by donating $5 a month or more. Click on our donation tab on the top right side of our website. Okay, we're going to pick up with a scripture reading where we left off last week. We're in the Gospel of John. We'll be in chapter 10, read by Alexander Scorby. John, chapter 10.
Chapter 10. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that entereth not by the door into the sheepfold, but climbeth up some other way, the same is a thief and a robber. But he that entereth in by the door is the shepherd of the sheep. To him the porter openeth, and the sheep hear his voice, and he calleth his own sheep by name, and leadeth them out. And when he putteth forth his own sheep, he goeth before them, and the sheep follow him, for they know his voice. And a stranger will they not follow, but will flee from him, for they know not the voice of strangers. This parable spake Jesus unto them, but they understood not what things they were which he spake unto them. Then said Jesus unto them again, Verily, verily, I say unto you, I am the door of the sheep. All that ever came before me are thieves. I am the door. By me, if any man enter in, he shall be saved, and shall go in and out, and find pasture. The thief cometh not but for to steal, and to kill, and to destroy. I am come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly. I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep. But he that is an hireling, and not the shepherd, whose own the sheep are not, seeth the wolf coming, and leaveth the sheep, and fleeth, and the wolf catcheth them, and scattereth the sheep. The hireling fleeth, because he is an hireling, and careth not for the sheep. I am the good shepherd, and know my sheep, and am known of mine. As the Father knoweth me, even so know I the Father. And I lay down my life for the sheep. And other sheep I have which are not of this fold. Them also I must bring, and they shall hear my voice. And there shall be one fold, and one shepherd. Therefore doth my Father love me, because I lay down my life, that I might take it again. No man taketh it from me, but I lay it down of myself. I have power to lay it down, and I have power to take it again. This commandment have I received of my Father. There was a division therefore again among the Jews for these sayings, and many of them said, He hath a devil and is mad. Why hear ye him? Others said, These are not the words of him that hath a devil. Can a devil open the eyes of the blind? And it was at Jerusalem the feast of the dedication, and it was winter. And Jesus walked in the temple in Solomon's porch. Then came the Jews round about him, and said unto him, How long dost thou make us to doubt? If thou be the Christ, tell us plainly. Jesus answered them, I told you, and ye believed not. The works that I do in my Father's name, they bear witness of me. But ye believe not, because ye are not of my sheep, as I said unto you. My sheep hear my voice, and I know them, and they follow me. And I give unto them eternal life, and they shall never perish, neither shall any man pluck them out of my hand. My Father, which gave them me, is greater than all, and no man is able to pluck them out of my Father's hand. I and my Father are one. Then the Jews took up stones again to stone him. Jesus answered them, Many good works have I showed you from my Father. For which of those works do ye stone me? The Jews answered him, saying, For a good work we stone thee not, but for blasphemy, and because that thou, being a man, makest thyself God. Jesus answered them, Is it not written in your law, I said, Ye are gods? If he called them gods, unto whom the word of God came, and the scripture cannot be broken, say ye of him whom the Father hath sanctified and sent into the world, Thou blasphemest, because I said, I am the Son of God? If I do not the works of my Father, believe me not, but if I do, though ye believe not me, believe the works, that ye may know and believe that the Father is in me, and I in him. Therefore they sought again to take him, but he escaped out of their hand, and went away again beyond Jordan into the place where John at first baptized, and there he abode. And many resorted unto him, and said, John did no miracle, but all things that John spake of this man were true. And many believed on him there.
All right. By the way, I changed mics. Is this any better, Jan?
Yes. That does sound better.
Okay. All right. We'll use this mic. Okay. Before we get started, I just want to make a note here. I see a lot of people in here on phones, and I don't know if people coming in on phones and we see the numbers. Maybe they're coming in with an app. I'm not sure. Probably so. So some of you are probably coming with an app. But, the best way to come into this program is with an app if you put it on your phone or browser. And you can also get an app on your computer. So, but in any event, Jan, do we have any questions tonight?
Yes, John. We have a whole bunch tonight. First one. According to Carl Miller, whom I greatly respect, traffic tickets are unlawful. They violate Article 1, Section 9 of the U.S. Constitution. No bill of attainder or ex post facto law shall be passed. A traffic ticket is a denial of due process rights, and under Section 18 U.S.C. Title 5, Section 556D, if due process rights are denied, jurisdiction ceases.
All right, well, we're not going to answer that at the moment because we're going to be talking about traffic tonight. So traffic court, also pretty much any code violation or any trial even in a town court or a village court. So we'll put that on hold for right now. What else you got? And by the way, am I coming through okay?
Yes, you're coming through fine, John.
Yeah, I'm not hearing you, Jan, if you're talking.
Okay. Now, I'm unmuted.
Maybe I have a problem on my end. Let's try it now.
Yes, can you hear me now, John?
I can hear you now.
Sure. Okay, good.
Okay, I guess you didn't hear what I was saying. We're going to be talking about traffic tonight, so we'll hold that question off for right now. Are you coming through? I'm not hearing you, Jan.
Yes, I found the mute button.
Oh, okay, good for you.
It must be catchy. After questioning authority, I have discovered citizenship is crucial to how we interact with our government as well as how we elect representatives. How do we get the Secretary of State of our state to recognize our commercial divorce to come out of the federal corporation pursuant to 28 U.S.C. 3002-15A. This is the first step our founding fathers took to become independent from the crown of Great Britain after their grievances were not being addressed. This is also a requirement of Joshua 23:12, where God commands us not to go into any nation, including the U.S. government, that is currently refusing to protect our right to contract or not to contract.
All right, well, it sounds like they're asking, how do we come out of this system? Am I getting that right?
Yes, that's correct, John.
Well, it's pretty difficult. 20 years ago, if you went into court and if you really were very careful on putting your paperwork together and responding correctly, you had a much bigger chance of winning than today. But most recently, you know, I say in the past 5 years, maybe a little more, it's become almost impossible to win in the courts. And, you know, I recall not too long ago, maybe 5 years ago or so, I won a case against the IRS. Since then, I haven't seen any cases, at least from my perspective, from what I've been watching, anybody winning a case in the IRS. So times have gotten worse. They're rats stuck in a corner. They're going to really hold on to everything they got harder, tighter and tighter. And, you know, they have, particularly in courts, but this is pretty much anywhere, they don't care. They just want to lord over us and doesn't permit any winning up against the institutions, you know, the government itself or any of the major corporations. It's almost impossible to win in the courts. Keyword, though, almost. But we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. So what's next, Jim?
Well, this one I'm not sure I should ask it or not. It's nebulous. Are there more people on California State that are ready to come back as a citizen of the Republic of California to be a lawful person? And if so, will you give out my email to those people? I am in belief if we go to our secretary with a few people, this might encourage our disservant to be accountable to 8 U.S.C. 1502 that requires them to issue a certificate of nationality that will gain back our immunity from where Article 4 Legislative Franchise Court.
All right, well, look, there's only one way to take this nation back. I know of no other. If anybody knows of another way, they can enlighten us on that. But the only way that this nation could be taken back is by the people themselves. For those who are familiar with devolution, yeah, Trump can work forward with devolution and give us the nation back, but the question becomes, can the people keep it? Evil will always pursue power anywhere they can pursue it. And definitely the United States, being able to control the government of the United States, is very powerful. So it'd be only a matter of time before we get back right to where we, you know, started from or tried to get out of. Therefore, the only way to save this nation is through committees of safety. Now, in California, we have quite a few committees of safety. We have about 1,200 members in California, and there are 58 counties. All 58 of those counties, we've had them constituted. NLA has visited, or members from NLA have visited, and went through a process of constituting every county. So there is contact information on California. These are the counties where we have committees of safety in process. And you can find this page just by clicking on directory. I'll just go back and do it all over again. Just click on directory, come down to your state, and you'll be able to then get a list of all of the different counties and individuals who have taken up you know, the responsibility of starting a committee of safety within their county. So they got their first name, their county, and their phone number. Now, anybody who signs up to do this and to take power and authority, they can contact Jan, and Jan will give them a list of all the people within their counties and actually throughout the whole state. There's a lot of people in that state. 1,200 people have joined here, so there's a lot of people. But that would be broken up by counties, so you can contact the people in your counties by phone. We don't give out emails. We just give first name, county, and their phone number. And so you can find the people in your county. You can make phone contact to try to encourage them to join up the Committee of Safety and get involved. You can also look, as you start to develop, to look for counties nearby and start calling those people and encourage them to start a Committee of Safety. Maybe come to your Committee of Safety meetings and then eventually assist them to get their counties going. It's extremely important that we get, as you know, if possible, all the counties within your state, because we have to work together in the counties from the political office to take back the state government and, of course, the federal government. And this is true with all the states. So again, anybody who wants to sign up for the Committee of Safety, go under directory. Let me just go through that one more time. Anybody who's watching the video. And by the way, this is going to be video recorded tonight, and it will be posted up on our website under today's issue. And you come down to the NLA Monday Open Forum videos, and that's where this tonight's program will be recorded. All of our programs we do record under Monday Night Call. They're recorded in MP3s, but certain ones are recorded in MP4s. And again, we do have quite a few that are already that way that we've got them recorded on video. You can also contact your district coordinators. Hey, Dan, are all these district coordinators active? Or lost some of them?
I believe Marna, for example, in District 2 is not active anymore. And I think there's one other, maybe two.
Okay, so we'll try to update this. If you can't contact your district coordinator, maybe you don't have one, a couple of people aren't active, maybe then just contact any one of them, and I'm sure they'll be able to help you and potentially send you to someone to help you, or maybe they'll help you themselves. But it's extremely important. This is the only way to save this nation, is to really take back our government that way. So anyway, we don't share emails that individual is asking, but we do share information where you can make contact with people in your county, and this is how you do it. And if there's nobody in your county, you can sign up and register your Committee of Safety by registering or editing your Committee of Safety right here. If someone is already registered and they have their phone number up and they'd like to pass it on to someone else in their group to be responsible for responding to people who want to join, then they could just go right here, register, edit, and edit their Committees of Safety there. So, next question.
Okay, considering that the Communist Party, pursuant to 50 U.S.C. 841, has captured our Board of Elections office, how do you propose that we recall officers de facto masquerading as our local government, having deep concerns for the security of my community as well as to the Republic, due to the public defender claiming that the U.S. government has unlimited jurisdiction over everything? That is unwarranted power.
Well, again, I don't know how many people again are familiar with devolution, and if you're not, you can find information on devolution under today's issues, and come down to devolution. You click on that, get a lot of information on what that's all about. You can also come down to Q News and on with more information, and we have various other videos and different things throughout the website that will assist you. But those are the two places really that you get an education on that. But taking back the nation, again, the military is the only way. They got too much control. They've been at this for a very long time. Literally, they've really been at this going, matter of fact, they've been at this all the way back as we were colonies. 1750 was the beginning of the destruction of our courts. That was the purpose of the bar attorneys that have been sent over here. And again, they were problematic in the colonies. And the problems persisted right into the Federalists. We had the enemy in the camp at the time of the Federalist Papers, and that's why slavery maintained itself. And we had what was called the Federalists. The people who called themselves the Federalists, really, they morphed into the Democratic Party. I believe it was about 1790, no, a little later than that, 1798, coming to the turn of the century, and then it became the Democratic Party. And the purpose of the Democratic Party was to change the focus from a republic to a democracy, and they've done a very good job at that, because many people believe we're a democracy. We're not a democracy, we're a republic. Just because we choose our representatives by voting, by popular vote, people think, well, you're a democracy because you choose people who's going to represent you. But that's not what we are. We're a republic. We've got a constitution. We're a natural law republic, the only one in the world. There are over 200 republics, but there's only one natural law republic, and that's in America. But they've done, again, they've done a very good job in hiding that. And they don't have the ability, we've never given them the ability to really discuss anything outside the powers that we've given them within the Constitution. And anybody who's read through the Constitution, they could see there's a very, very small booklet. And particularly, you know, we only gave, for instance, those who are writing our law, you know, Congress, we only gave them 18 powers. So the Senate and the Congress only have 18 powers. But they've gone far beyond that. Where democracy, you know, people elect people to make decisions for them, and there's not necessarily a constitution at all. So you're really giving them the opportunity to make up whatever they want to make up and get done whatever they want to get done. And that's where we're at today, unfortunately. So as Jefferson said, if people expect to be ignorant and free, they expect what never was and never will be. And, you know, until we become educated and start to understand who we are as a people, how things work, how the political process actually works without the politics, and also how the court system works. Because those are the two power structures, the judiciary and the political. And unless we can take that back, we will have no control over our government. But we can have 100% control over our government. Over the course of the next couple of weeks, we're going to get into these details. And it really starts tonight because we're going to talk about the problems locally first. So that's what we'll be talking about tonight, how to take control on a local end as far as the court system is concerned. Next week, I think we're going to focus in on, how we can bring our sheriff on board, how we can make first contact with our sheriff, bring the sheriff on board, and then how we as a people can take control of all local government, whether that be, you know, on a town, city, village, or even the county level, and eventually, of course, on the state level. But the people have to get up and do it. Liberty is not free. Liberty is not going to protect itself. The Constitution is up to you to defend. And if you don't want to defend it, then you don't deserve having it. That's why, you know, people need to step up and take care of business. We've written lots of books on this, handbooks on different processes of organizing and how things work. You can find them under Starter Committee of Safety. As a matter of fact, if you just click on the button on the blue bar, Starter Committee of Safety, and you can follow the breadcrumb trails and lead you through that process. But if you come down, eventually you'll get to the handbooks, videos, and tools underneath that under the blue bar there, Starter Committee of Safety. And we have a booklet here, which is, County Committee of Safety Organized Handbook. And if you click on that, it's a 66-page booklet. It's downloaded on PDF. We also have that available in a pocket handbook that you can buy up on Amazon. And if anybody's interested in the pocket handbooks, which are all free, though, online in PDF to be downloaded, so you don't have to buy them. But under the welcoming tab, you'll come down and see books by John Duresh, and you'll find all of the different handbooks that we do have up on Amazon. You can click on any one of these, and you can purchase them. But again, you can download all these things on PDFs underneath Starter Committee of Safety. Okay, I guess next question.
On the video call on 2/19, there was a man that claimed he was a foreign national that got detained for driving with no license when we are statutory aliens. Can you connect us together? I would like to communicate on how to escape the long-arm jurisdiction of state while traveling upon the public roadways at our pleasure. In America, slaves do have a right to escape slavery.
Well, again, we're going to talk about that tonight, so I'm not going to get into much detail on this question. As far as making contact, I don't know, Jan, or I don't think you were here maybe that night, but if you can remember and you were, maybe you can connect these two individuals. But other than that, we've got to be careful. Look, we've been at this for about 15 years now, and we started off on some of these ideas that a lot of people are teaching online. Most of them don't work. A lot of people claim that they have lots of success, and And it's not necessarily the case. Some of them will get you in trouble. I mean, if you're going to go into the federal courts, you're going to go into the state courts, and you're going to try to make these arguments there outside of the process of law, because that's they're really going into, you know, into their system by using their system and their codes and their different statutes or whatever in order to defeat them. More often than not, you're going to get yourself in trouble, but generally speaking, most of it fails. We've tried lots of different things to take control of the courts. I've been reasonably successful on the lower court level as far as towns, town courts and village courts particularly, or traffic court. You know, cities have traffic court. I presume most cities, if not all cities, have a court separated from the state court. And it's just called traffic court. I know the closest city to me, which is only one town away, really. They have a traffic court, so they have a traffic court. They have a county court and they have a state court. And the county court and the state courts are courts of record, which is supposed to proceed according to the common law, which we'll discuss maybe a little bit of that too tonight. But again, it's real difficult to take these courts back. But we do have a process. As a matter of fact, I'm in court right now. I'm quite a few cases. I got three cases going. One of them is in traffic court. It's in a town court. And I'm going to share tonight the paperwork that I put together, and it'll be an update to the paperwork that I've shared before. We'll talk about that after this Q&A for people who have written questions in. How many more questions do we have, Jan?
Oh, a couple, three.
Well, let's see. I don't want to take too much longer, but go ahead.
Okay. There is a sheriff oversight committee being formed in Alameda County, California. What words would be powerful to speak at the meeting?
Sheriff oversight. Is the sheriff on board? I don't know if the sheriff is on board or not with a group of people and what they're trying to do. I mean, again, we do have a process on how to approach a sheriff. And again, that you'll find in the Committee of Safety Common Law Handbook, there is a part that will talk about how to approach and deal with the sheriff, how to bring them on board, how to educate them, how to work with them, and they work with you in order to take your government back on all levels. And again, next week we're going to get is specifically into that subject matter. But tonight we're going to be looking at traffic court, particularly and other codes and statutes and different things that a town or a village court might, or even a traffic court might try to apply upon you. So we'll talk about how to escape that process. Okay, next question.
On February 8th, 2024, SCOTUS issued a 9-0 verdict abrogating sovereign immunity from legislative tribunals in U.S. DA versus Kurtz. Why isn't this earth-shaking attention that I believe it deserves?
Read the first part of that again, because I think I heard about this.
Yeah, it's a little bit tricky. On February 8th, 2024, SCOTUS issued a 9-0 verdict abrogating sovereign immunity from legislated tribunals in USDA versus Kurtz.
Abrogating sovereign immunity? When he talks, I don't know whether they're talking about the sovereign immunity that they claim that they have, that means the judges and all those individuals working for the government, or are they talking about the real sovereign immunity of the people? It doesn't seem clear to me. Do you have a perspective on that, Jim?
Is this not the case that Gerard brings up sometimes about how it was a really big deal, but it kind of went under the radar? It was not really noticed. Is this that one?
I read about a case. I haven't seen the specific case itself, but I did read about a case on some lawyer site recently, talking about this kind of a thing, which really brought us back to the common law ultimately, and the power and the authority of the people. But again, I don't understand the question from what perspective they're talking. Who's sovereign immunity? Obviously, judges and individuals who we've empowered with certain powers, try to claim that they have sovereign immunity. They do not have sovereign immunity. They have powers that we, the people, ordained and established for them to exercise according to what we have written, what powers that they have. And as long as they're acting within that power, then they have, they have immunity. And I wouldn't call it sovereign immunity, but they do have immunity. But once they step outside that authority that we've given them, now they have to answer, and they're subject to a civil case and even a criminal case, depending on the situation. But I don't know, again, I'll ask back again, Jen, can you tell whether this has something to do with sovereign immunity for we the people or sovereign immunity for those people who are in office?
Not the way it's written, John. I can't make a distinction between the two.
Yeah, I can't either. So maybe they can rewrite that. We'll try another time. Okay, next question.
Hey, can I say something?
Sure, go right ahead.
The sovereign immunity became a big, big deal because Congress and the Senate voted that they had sovereign immunity with Donald Trump when they decided to not pause the vote. And they basically said, well, we have sovereign immunity when they disobeyed the executive order and ratified the election, which made them all treasonous, and everything they did is basically, fraud. Mm-hmm. So that's the sovereign immunity. They're talking about that judges and Congress, now they're saying they don't have it. And it was another big thing that went down, and basically it was the Supreme Court saying that your ABC agencies are administrative and they don't have the power to jail people and hold people to those rules and regulations unless they have a contract with them. And that kind of went under the radar.
That's absolutely true. And even if they had a contract, they don't have the ability to incarcerate, though. But nevertheless, because they have to take that into a court, a common law court. But, I heard something about that. But the Supreme Court has ruled on this numerous times, and we've written a lot of these things in our paperwork. We teach this on our course, and of course, which is court access in the common law. Anybody interested in that, they can go into Education Starts Here and click on court access in the common law. And this course is a 90-hour course. It's videotaped, and it's available to anybody who wants to take it. You can read up about it, and we do give the first class for free so that people can get sort of a taste of what this course is about and how it operates and, what we're teaching. But, we should look a little further into what that's about. Trump doesn't even have immunity to some of the things. He's not up in any of the courts or anything that he would have to try to exercise that. He's got immunity only from the standpoint as long as he's acting within the structure of the powers and the authorities we gave him, and the structure and the powers and the authority that we gave the legislators in order to expand on that. And that, of course, is codes, statutes, and regulations. So as long as he's acting within that structure, then he does have immunity. I would never call it, that he has some sovereign immunity. He's got immunity from being able to be brought into court on a civil or any other kind of a charge. But if he does act outside and he does commit a crime in office, he could be, of course, impeached. And after impeachment, he would be liable for, to have to answer also in a court of law, especially if it's a criminal act. So, but generally speaking, of course, none of the charges up against Trump was anything outside of his authority anyway. So. Okay, next question.
Okay, if our founders had only two laws with which they defeated the British, why does seemingly no one in America today know them? Could this be the reason why we are where we are today?
Well, again, do they say the two laws? We do have the Declaration of Independence, which makes it quite clear that we have the power to alter or change our government anytime we please. But of course, if the people are not organized, if the people are exercising their unalienable right of controlling our government, having government by consent, which is what the Declaration really makes that point, And all our law is built upon that foundation, which, again, is the Declaration of Independence. So we can do this, but the people have to be active. You know, our founding fathers all belonged to committees of safety. They all were involved, of course. It was the committees of safety that they used in order to bring forth the first Continental Congress. It was the committees of safety, all the colonies coming together with their committees of safety in their colonies. Okay, and they brought forth the second Continental Congress. And through that committee of safety, they structured a process of government during the time of war and also to fight that war, and all the way up to the point in time when they came together to put forward the Constitution, where we the people ordained and established the Constitution for the United States of America. And so that's the law. I mean, the Declaration of Independence is the key. And the Declaration of Independence is a covenant with God. We ask God to, for his blessings and to live under his law, the laws of nature, and the laws of nature's God. And so that's where our foundation is. And that's why we have unalienable rights. And there's a lot more than the 10 that we find in the Bill of Rights, you know, each one of those articles, those 10 articles. But anyway, next question.
That seems like a good place to stop tonight, John.
Okay, sounds good. Okay, tonight we're going to talk a little bit about dealing with the courts, so particularly for that individual who's interested in that. And again, this will be recorded for those people on phones and they can't see the desktop. Maybe they're running apps on their phones and they can't see the desktop. But if anybody can't see it or if they want to review what we're talking about tonight, you'll be able to go onto today's issues and click on NLA Monday Open Forum videos. And last week we did have a conversation with Sheriff Dar Leaf, and he came on board and we spent 2 hours together, and it was quite a good program. And the Monday before we talked about court access in the common law. So we'll be posting our videos up here on this page. Of course, we also are on our Rumble page. We have a YouTube page and a Rumble page. We post them up there also. I think we've been posting them up on YouTube. Yeah, I'm pretty sure we have been on YouTube also. But you can find it right on this page here. The easiest way to find the ones that we have up here is come to today's issues. And again, click on the Monday night open forum. Now, only when we're teaching something particularly or have a special guest do we put the videos up there. And I'm kind of hoping to have a lot of teaching going on, maybe the first half hour of our program over the course of the next few months and longer, hopefully, where we'll talk about something specific on how we can save this nation, how we can take back our courts, how we can take back our political process, how we connect with our sheriff, how we can defeat the traffic courts and other things going on in those courts, which they have no power and authority to prosecute. So for those who have taken the course, you'll find what we're going to look at tonight under the course, under the contents. Let me just go there real quickly. Court access and the common law. These two tabs right here, only the people who are in the course will see these two tabs, and this is how you enter the course. So anybody interested, again, click on this tab here, court access and the common law, and their education starts here, and then you can then join up and receive these two things here. One is the recorded videos, and the other one is the table of contents. And I mentioned in the course that whenever we have anything new, and I do have a lot of new stuff to put up here, I just haven't had time to really put it together and get it up here. But I did get the one up for the traffic. You find it towards the bottom of this page where you find forms for traffic court. And this was added on just a couple of days ago, March 29th. And this is, of course, after the court. And it's it's dealing with city, town, village courts of equity. Now, I've also put it up here for people. Anybody can have this information we're talking about. If you go to Education Starts Here, and you come down to Law, highlight Law, and then you come over to Court Forms and Process. When you come there, if you come down a wee bit, you'll see Traffic Court. Let me see if I can get to that. Challenge and Jurisdiction, Habeas Corpus. Maybe I passed it. Let me go back up a bit. Instructions, traffic court, right here. And we have this both in PDF and in Microsoft Word. Now, of course, Microsoft Word, I presume most people have it. If they don't have it, no matter what kind of a computer you have, whether it's Windows or whatever, there is downloads that you can get that will work just like Microsoft Word. And but in any event, we're going to go through this. One of the first things, and we've talked about this. Now, again, this has been updated. The old instructions and forms I had, I always try to keep updating it, maybe create new strategies, much more powerful strategies. And that's what we've done with this. I think we have a very powerful strategy. It's in the testing right now, as a matter of fact, because, like I said, we have it going in a court right now. But file on demand is the first paper that you'd want to print out. Now, this file on demand under penalty of law is a one-pager. I'm not going to read through this. Anybody can download and read through this. And anybody, this form really hasn't changed, I don't think. Maybe the way I put the reference here, possibly, maybe I've changed those words. Other than that, this is just their codes that they have to abide by. Remember, codes are for them. It's not for us. We, the people, are under law. They're under equity. Equity is legislative law, and the purpose of legislative law is to control people who work for the government, for the bureaucrat, for the elected individual, the appointed individual, and also for commercial activity. And, of course, on a federal level, it's interstate commercial activity. So that's what these laws are for, not for us. They have no power or authority over us. As long as we, the people, believe that they have power and authority over us, well, then they do. People need to get educated. We need to step up, and we need to say, no, we're not under this. And we need to apply. We got some powerful papers, and particularly the one we're going to share tonight, I think, is extremely powerful. And I don't think that they can really gainsay against it. It's going to be pretty tough. And we can also, there is a threat in here, which we'll see, and I'll make note of it, which really should help to empower us and make these people to obey it. But anyway, this is in Microsoft Word and PDF. You can click on Enabling Editing and then save it to your desktop or you know, your files, whatever you want to do. But I wouldn't change anything because this is the law. Okay, so file on demand under penalty of law. That copy of this goes on copy on the top of all your paperwork. When you're filing papers against a court, whether it's a village court, a town court, and even to some degree a city court, which we'll talk about that, and a traffic court. This would be the first paper, and it would be the top paper when you send your papers in. Okay, the next thing would be the appearance ticket. Now, this is something new. I decided to add this because I wanted to make the point more powerful that this is a special appearance. And basically, and again, you want to click on Enable Editing and make this yours. Every place where you need to add something, you can see it in red. But just to see, the jurisdiction is referred to as a court of record under the rules of common law. As far as a case number is concerned, it's the ticket. So what I do is I attach the ticket and just say, see attached ticket, ticket attached. So far, I have not seen a ticket come with a court case number. So we just refer to that. And basically it says notice of special appearance. Please take notice that your name hereby appears in the above entitled commercial code violation by the undersigned who is appearing on his own behalf in this commercial traffic court complaint. Now again, this could be on any code violation. And you just have to make the adjustment. This is not some other kind of a code violation, then you'd want to change whatever it might be from the commercial traffic court. But the word complaint is an important thing to leave in there because that's what they're dealing with. They're dealing with complaints, okay? And we're going to talk a little bit about that. So this traffic court complaint by special appearance for the purpose of testing the sufficiency of the jurisdiction of the court. All papers in this action is to be addressed to the address below. And then, of course, you put your date in there and your information. Now, special appearance, we got two footnotes in here. One is here for special appearance, Okay. And the other one is a court of record. So what is a court of record? And a court of record is one that proceeds according to the common law. And you can get the details of the court cases that we put up here and also that it comes from Black's Law. But a special appearance is for the purpose of testing the sufficiency of the service of the jurisdiction of the court. A general appearance is made where the defendant waives the defects of service and submits to the jurisdiction. Now, once you make a plea, you've submitted to the jurisdiction. So you need to go in with a special appearance. It's extremely important. I don't remember whether I still kept the special appearance in the paper. We're going to see it in a few minutes. But this is the first time I went into court in the local courts, in my case it was a town court, where I put a notice of appearance. You know, you see a lot of lawyers will come into the court whenever you file a court case and you sue somebody. Their lawyer will come in and put on a notice of appearance. So I figured, let me duplicate that. I think it'll give them more power and authority, and it also makes the point specifically that we're challenging the jurisdiction. Now, often courts just ignore you on these kind of things, okay? So the next thing is notice of motion. And this is something new I came up to realize, that this is what has to be done. Because what I find is when I have to deal with a local court and I file my papers, they just ignore it. And then I come in and they play dumb. They don't remember getting it or whatever. And sometimes I receive it back, okay? And that's a violation of the law. Matter of fact, it's a crime. I think it's 1 year in jail for anybody who removes, maybe two, anybody who removes any kind of a document out from the court, anything that's filed, any clerk or anybody removes that, they're guilty of a crime. And we make that point, by the way, on that paper we were looking at before, which is a file and demand. It makes that point very clear what violations they're violating. So a lot of times they'll say, I'll come in with the copy, okay, and say, your clerk sent it back to me. And by the way, that's a crime, and I'll read the crime. You can read it right off the front paper, which, again, is the file on demand. And nevertheless, you find yourself arguing, maybe coming back one or two or three times, and, either you're going to win or they're going to go forward. Then you have a choice on whether you're going to move it to federal court for cause for violating your right of due process. And we do have paperwork on that also. You'll find that in our course and with instructions. But in any event, what I'm trying to do is not have to go to court. And that's why I realized maybe adding a notice of motion. Now, the notice of motion, okay, let me just read through it. It's a one-pager. It's very simple. Again, we get back to the jurisdiction of the court. We get back to the seat ticket attached for the court case number, and you put up your name. And it's a town court prosecutor. Sometimes that's hard to find. So just put town court processor and send it to the, prosecutor, and send it to the court, to the prosecutor, care of the court. That's what I did in this case. And I was able to find the prosecutor. But it turns out when I went to the site to get the information, they just retired. And there's nobody that I can see has replaced that person. So I did it care of the court and just put it to the town court prosecutor. Now, this is a notice of motion. It's a motion in the court. So you have the paper that you're talking about coming in. You're denying the jurisdiction. You're challenging the jurisdiction. So you're coming in with the challenge of the jurisdiction. And now you make a notice of motion. You want them to answer. And that's the purpose of this paper. And again, it didn't dawn on me before that this might be a way to push things, and I'm kind of hoping that I don't ever have to go to court, that they're going to deal with this and through the mail and kick it out. And if not, I think on this one I'm taking it to federal court for cause, and I'm going to sue them all for violating my right of due process, because the town court is not capable of giving you a due process. And we're going to look at that when we look at the paperwork. But anyway, let me just read this. It's very short. Notice of motion to the above-named respondent, which would be the town court prosecutor. Oral arguments not requested. You are hereby summoned to answer the attached jurisdictional challenge and to serve a copy of your answer to the petitioner within 30 days after completion of service via United States Postal Service. In case of your failure to answer, a default judgment will be taken against the above-named court for relief demanded. pursuant to CPLR, this is what controls them, 2214B, answering affidavits, if any, are required to be served upon the undersigned at least 8 days before the return date of this motion. And then respectfully submit it, put the date, your name, and if you have a seal, you put your seal on there. Maybe one day we'll talk more about seals. We do talk about seals in our handbooks because every committee of safety should have a seal. So anyway, that's a notice of motion. That's a new thing. And they always take a lot more than 30 days before they even give you a court date. At least that's been my experience. But in any event, if they don't respond, I'm going to then do a default. Now, I don't know if I wrote up a default and put it up here. Let me take a quick look. Yeah, I did do an affidavit of default, so we'll share that too. Okay, so the main paper, which is a verified jurisdiction challenge. And remember, that's an affidavit. You're swearing to everything that's in this paper. So you want to be careful and make your points clear. Affidavit rules the court. An affidavit unrebutted wins the court case. They have 30 days, otherwise I win the court case. So this forces them into a situation to answer. And again, I'm trying to get them to answer without me having to spend my time some evening to go down to traffic court. So verified jurisdictional challenge. That's what we're going to look about tonight. This is a new one, different than what it follows a lot of the same information, but there's some new stuff in here. And of course, the paperwork I just shared, a lot of that is new too. So basically the same thing, your name, town, court, prosecutor. If you got their name, fine. If not, then just put town court prosecutor, or maybe it's a city court, maybe it's a village court, whatever the case may be. To some degree, and maybe we'll talk about this in the future, a lot of this stuff will apply and can apply also in the state courts and the federal courts. And remember, the federal courts only have the ability to answer constitutional issues, okay? And they're supposed to champion the Constitution. Of course, they're not doing that. So, again, they don't have the power, the authority. They have no jurisdictional control over personam jurisdiction. Anyway, they don't have personam jurisdiction over the people, except in very specific cases. And, again, that's going to be a conversation another time. But, anyway, let's take a look at this paper. And after we finish looking at this paper, we'll open up for Q&A. Anybody wants to get into the Q&A? It's a star 6 and a 1 if you're on a phone. We are opening Q&A right now. So it's a star 6 and a 1 to get into the Q&A if you're on a phone. If you're on an app, whether it be on a browser or your phone or whatever, you can just press the button to enter Q&A. Okay, so I, your name, one of the people of your state, herein petitioner by special appearance for the purpose of testing the sufficiency of the jurisdiction of the Nisi Prius, which is your town, village, or traffic court. So Nisi Prius Court. Petitioner via a verified action hereby opens a court of record to move this court for dismissal for lack of personam jurisdiction. And that's how you to win this case is through they don't have personam jurisdiction, and that is the key. Now, it's important. We have a lot of footnotes in here. I'm not going to go through footnotes. What a special appearance is, we did read that. But as far as what a Nisi Prius court is, that's in footnote number 5. People should be looking at the footnotes. When I read a paper, if there's footnotes in it, and very, very rarely do they put footnotes on their paperwork. They will quote certain things, but they very rarely put in footnotes. I try to put all these things in footnotes, which explains the meaning of the words, the phrases, or whatever it is that we're talking about, and what a court of record is. And again, we have a footnote on that also. But anyway, let's move on this. Before a plea can be made, the petitioner must first know the jurisdiction. They can't tell you because they don't know. The court must prove on the record all jurisdictional facts related to the jurisdiction as asserted. The law requires proof of jurisdiction to appear on the record of the administrative agency in all administrative proceedings. Furthermore, petitioner challenges jurisdiction of the court, and therefore, before the court can advance, the prosecutor, hereinafter the respondent, must first respond to petitioner's jurisdictional challenge and show by what constitutional authority the attached New York State, in this case DMV, you have to put U.S. if you're in a different state, uniform traffic ticket complaint. And again, the word complaint is a key thing here. Against the petitioner should not be dismissed for lack of personam jurisdiction, and clearly state the jurisdiction of the court as required by law. Now, as we read through this, you're going to see why this word complaint is extremely important, because everything they're doing is they're complaining. They're making a complaint. They're filing a complaint. Okay? They try to turn your papers. This happens all the time. Must have happened four or five times in an IRS case I got going, and a couple of times in a New York State case I got going against the controller here in New York State. And they always keep trying to call my action a complaint, and I always correct it and give them the proper understanding of what a complaint is and why this is not a complaint and what an action is and why this is an action. An action at law is one that proceeds according to the common law. So again, the complaint against the petitioner should not be dismissed for lack of personam jurisdiction, and clearly state the jurisdiction of the court as required by law. Both Black's and Brovier's Law Dictionary defines a complainant as a petitioner in a suit of chancery, and that's the key. That's the difference. We're not here for a chancery. We're not here for a judge. We're here for the people. You got something against me? Bring it to the people. Get yourself an indictment by the people, which is the approval to take me into court for whatever purposes you think it's necessary, and then you give me a jury so that I have a trial by jury. So the people decide, and not a judge. Anytime you're in a court and the judge is making a decision, you are in a chancery court. Okay? So a court having the jurisdiction of a chancellor is a court administering equity, which is codes and statutes and regulations, and proceeding according to the forms and principles of equity, distinct from the courts of common law. Courts of record, and by the way, again, these we have lots of proof on this. We have footnotes which lead them to, particular cases, or maybe defines a word or a phrase by either Bovier's or Black's law. So anyway, a court having the jurisdiction of a chancellor is a court administering equity and proceeding according to the forms of principles of equity, distinct from the courts of common law. Courts of record are common law actions and are such as will lie on the particular facts at common law without the aid of a statute. Statutes don't apply to me. Petitioner has an unalienable right protected under the Seventh Amendment to a court of law, which proceeds under the common law and the rules of the common law. And let me just read this real quick. This would be Amendment 7 of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. And it says, 7, in suits of common law, see right there, in suits of common law, that's what we're coming in on, that's our right, suits of common law, not statutory law, where the value in the controversy shall exceed $20, the right of a trial by jury shall be preserved. And that is a common law court. And we have to have a free and independent jury. And that's another thing maybe we'll talk about in the future, how to create and make sure you have a free and independent jury. And no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States than according to the rules of the common law. So right there under the Seventh Amendment talks about common law courts, the right of a common law court, and the right to rules of common law, not the rules of equity. So all their codes and stuff is meaningless as far as we're concerned. But you have to be able to defend against it, and you have to be able to really, see when they make a point. You can't let one thing go by. And if there's one word in a complaint, if it's coming up against you, you need to, if there's one word there or one phrase that you don't really completely understand, you need to look it up. And you need to look it up in a legal dictionary. That's Black's or Bovier's is two of the ones that I use. They're downloadable, by the way, and we do have it on that page where Laura's at. And we also have it in our course where you can download both of those dictionaries. Okay, let me see where I left off. Courts of record are common law actions, and such as live particular facts of common law without the aid. Oh, I've read through that. So let's jump up. But whereas a court proceeding under the New York State Department of Motor Vehicle Uniform Traffic Code are under equity and not law, petitioner's right are not to be ignored and hijacked into jurisdictions unknown via summary proceedings. And that's what they're doing. You're being hijacked into jurisdictions unknown. They don't even know the jurisdiction. They can't even define it. Because if they did, then they'd know that they're breaking the law. So they don't teach these judges that. And they don't even teach you this in law school. They kind of bypass this stuff. And they teach you some fillers and things. They clearly don't teach the Constitution. They'll refer to the Constitution, but they won't ever really, law school, and they may refer to the Constitution here or there, but never really quote much of it and really say, well, look, it's best to use statutes, it's best to use codes, and it's best to use the cases similar to your case and rest in those things. That's not how common law works. A thing similar is not necessarily the same thing. That's a common law maxim. And we teach maxims also in our course. Okay, after the respondent responds, the judge must either dismiss the case or show proof on the record that the court has personam jurisdiction. Since the court proceeds under statutes and codes, petitioner perceives that the court is an administrative nisi prius court, and therefore petitioner denies jurisdiction. We read, no judicial process, whatever form it may assume, can have any lawful authority outside the limits of the jurisdiction of the court or judge by whom it is issued. And once challenged, jurisdiction cannot be assumed, it must be proved. And then we give, this is also written up in Black's Law, and you'll find also court cases to back it up, and we did put a footnote here. The definition of law is that which is laid down, ordained, or established. And we the people ordained and established the law. Read that in the preamble of the Constitution. It is a rule or method according to which phenomena or actions coexist or follow each other and must be obeyed or be subject to sanctions or legal consequences. In our republic, common law is the law of the land by which we the people chose to be judged when we assumed among the powers of the earth the separate and equal stations to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitled us. In the United States, before any court have authority to hear a case, the court must have both in personam and subject matter jurisdiction. Any court, not a court of record, has no authority to proceed without the consent of the person involved. No judge or legislator can alter that which the people ordained, or to alter is high treason. Now remember, they can't proceed until you make a plea. And often what I've seen in court, and there are a lot of people talking about, the judge will say, I'm going to put a plea in for you. You need to object to that. You can't put a plea in for me. Are you my lawyer? I didn't hire you as a lawyer. You know, and these judges are, you know, you can get away with a lot more in these local courts, the low courts, than you can in a state or a federal court. You got to be more careful in a state or a federal court how you talk to a judge. But you could be a little pushy in these lower courts. They haven't got a clue on what's going on. They don't know the law. They're not even attorneys in most cases anyway. I'm sure there are some, but generally speaking, they go to judge school for a week or whatever it is, and they have the prosecutor who's a bar attorney that advises them. So really it's the prosecutor making really all the decisions, especially the decisions of law. So again, you know, you have to understand that and appreciate that so in order to defend against it. American courts are vested by the people, the author and the source of law. Remember, we are the author and the source of all law. Of course, the law being common law, God is the author and the source of that law. But as far as the law that's legislative law, we are the source of that law. And people need to understand that. That's the power of the jury to nullify, then the power of nullification. If something is being applied towards an individual that's a statute or a regulation, and maybe it'd be rightly so, maybe someone in court that's being prosecuted or sued, maybe that individual is someone operating in commercial activities, or maybe they're a person that was working for the government, so whatever the case may be there. And if the jury hears a code or a statute that does apply to them, they may feel it's unjust. They may feel the law is unjust, period, or they may feel it's just unjust in this case, and they can nullify it, you know, and go beyond it. Of course, the judges today, they control the juries. The juries are all stacked juries, and that's why you have to free your jury. If you're going to go to court and you do finally get in and you're going to make an argument, first order of business is to free the jury. And that's something we'll discuss about again at another time. We do have all this information on our website, but we'll get into detail in conversation on that in the near future. So American courts are vested by the people who are the author and the source of law through constitutions ordained by we the people. Therefore, a court must first have constitutional authority over an individual before it can proceed in a criminal case. In criminal cases, a court must have an indictment by a fully informed, untainted grand jury. If the grand jury is not fully informed and untainted, then it's meaningless. It means nothing. And if you can prove that, then, of course, that indictment would be irrelevant. In any event, in law anyway, under common law, the only people who have access to a grand jury would be the sheriff or the coroner. And in some cases, the people. But generally, if the people are going in to try to get an indictment on someone that violated them, for instance, to bring it into the court, they'd go to the sheriff. And the sheriff would decide whether he could take that case before the jury or not. But there are situations where people will want to go talk to the grand jury, and that's where we're building administrators for the grand jury to make that decision, to bring that into the grand jury. Also, the grand jury is the only one that can make a deal with the individual. Prosecutors, they'll get a case against someone and they'll say, hey, you're going to get 20 years, you're facing 20 years, plead guilty, we'll give you 3. Well, that's extortion. That's unlawful. That's a crime. Okay, but they do it all day long, every day, and the people don't know, and because of our ignorance, they do whatever they want. And as long as we remain ignorant, they're going to continue to do whatever they want. They got the guns. We got to take it away from them. We got to take the power. And again, we get back to the committees of safety for that. So anyway, let me go back here. Therefore, a court must first have constitutional authority over the individual before it can proceed. In criminal cases, a court must have an indictment by fully informed, untainted grand jury. In other words, the permission by the people to proceed. Without that permission, they can't go forward. And that includes a town court that tries to put you in jail for under a year, saying, well, they have the power to put you in jail up to a year. Nothing could be further from the truth. They do not have that power. They don't have the power to either fine or incarcerate. They can only execute the statutes upon the individuals they have authority over, which again brings us back to bureaucrats, individuals who are elected or appointed, and or people who are actively involved in some commercial activity where they have the authority over them. So furthermore, all state laws and constitutions are ultimately governed by the Supremacy Clause of the Constitution for the United States. Now again, there's lots of footnotes in here, and you should be looking. What I suggest is read the paper without looking at footnotes, then come back and read the paper looking at footnotes, because then you get a better appreciation. Okay, so Supremacy Clause of the Constitution for the United States of America, as ordained by we the people in Article 6, Clause 2, that defines the law of the land, which renders anything in the Constitution or laws of any state to the contrary notwithstanding. We also find in Miranda versus the State of Arizona, where rights secured by the Constitution are involved, there can be no rulemaking, so the rules are irrelevant to us. All legislation, anything repugnant and has nothing to do with us anyway, which would abrogate them. We the people ordained and established the Constitution for the United States of America. We the people vested Congress to make law via Section 1, Article 1, Section 8. We the people did not vest Congress with lawmaking powers to control the people's behavior. We the people are above the Constitution or legislative law, whereas government authorities are under the Constitution. We the people are subject only to the laws of nature and of nature's God. And here's a court case, and again, there's a footnote on it. All codes, rules, and regulations are for government authorities only, not human creators in accordance with God's laws. All codes, rules, and regulations are unconstitutional and are lacking due process. That's the key there. It lacks due process. It applies something upon you without first being proved. The phrase at law is used to point out, and that's the word at law or law in the Constitution. The phrase at law is used to point out that thing is to be done according to the course of the common law. It is distinguished from proceeding in equity. All laws, rules, and practices which are repugnant to the Constitution are null and void. In maintaining harmony with the U.S. Constitution, the New York State Constitution did not list town and or village courts as courts of record. Article 6, Section 1B, the Court of Appeals, this is in the New York State Constitution, by the way. You have to look up your Constitution and see what courts are courts of record, and you'll find pretty much probably the same thing that you're going to find here in New York. The courts of appeal, the Supreme Court, including the appellate division thereof, the Court of Claims, the County Court, the Surrogate Courts, the Family Courts, the courts of the civil and criminal jurisdiction of the City of New York, and such other courts as the legislators may determine shall be courts of record. Now you notice it doesn't say anything about towns, it doesn't say anything about villages, and it doesn't say anything about traffic court, and there may be something also about the cities, which is a little sticky to talk about, but we're going to talk about that also to some degree because they operate under statute. Any court that operates under statutes has nothing to do with us. All their courts operate under statutes. In maintaining harmony with the U.S. Constitution and New York State New York State legislators clearly did not list town and or village courts as courts of record. And we went through this. I'm not going to read through them all, but it does list the courts that are courts of record. Now, a court of record is one that proceeds according to the common law without statutes, regulations, or any kind of a code. Section 155, and you'll have to look it up in your state. This is New York State traffic infraction. When you get a ticket, it's basically Section 155 traffic infraction. That's VAT. Clearly, that states that a traffic infraction is not a crime and that no jury trial shall be allowed for traffic infractions. So you can't get a jury trial, and therefore you can't get due process, okay? Particularly for, you know, traffic violations or infractions. Tribunals for all courts of record are the jury, the people themselves. Therefore, Section 155 impedes a court of record. The common law permits destruction of abatement of nuisance, traffic codes for commercial activities only by summary proceedings. Now, we talk about this in our course, and, you know, people, really, you should understand what these summary proceedings are. This particular paragraph has to be changed accordingly, again, to your state. And if it's something that they're trying to get you through some other code that has nothing to do with traffic violation, again, you know, you have to look these things up and make the point and let it be known. There is no authority. It doesn't apply to you. And summary proceedings are not permitted in a court of record. Not permitted, where a judge can make these kind of decisions. Now, the only time you can push that forward is a couple of different things. You can do for a summary judgment for the purpose of a default, and you don't even have to go to the judge for that. You just go do an affidavit and file it with the clerk. Again, we talk about that in our course. You can also push a destruction for an abatement of nuisance. Okay, so you can force that judge to make a decision, which would be a summary decision within that court, in order to throw that case out. Now, other than those two cases, there are no summary judgments or decisions that can be made in a court of record. Again, extremely important to understand. American Jurisprudence, second edition, section 114. As to the construction with reference to the common law, an important canon of construction, and remember, all law is constructive. It's built one upon another, one law again, another again. You know, it's just bringing everything into harmony using a construction of law. And the same thing is done in logic, you know. Common law is common sense. It's construction of maxims, things that are true that can't be denied, things that are common sense. You construct your case with common sense. They construct their case with code violations, which lacks the ability of having due process. It lacks due process. Okay. So an important canon of construction is that Constitution must be construed in reference to the common law. The common law so permitted destruction of the abatement. Now, we were talking about this, of nuisance, by summary proceedings. And it was never supposed that a constitutional provision was intended to interfere with the established principles. And although there is no common law of the United States in the sense of a national customary law, as distinguished from the common law of England. Now, the customary law is what they use. They come in and they'll bring cases in and say, matter of fact, I got a paper right here that's telling me that the thing similar is, therefore this case should be decided in a particular way because there's something else that's similar. Let me see if I can read this. It says here, Defendant Appellee, the United States of America, respectfully submits this letter. They love to respond by letters. They write lies in their letters. It's not a sworn affidavit. And the judge has a place to regurgitate it and hang his hat, believing, well, this guy said it must be true. You have to, any letter that goes in, you have to come in with an affidavit and make the points where they're lying, because they lie. That's all they do for a living. They just lie. That's a fact. Every lawyer I've ever dealt with just goes into court and lies. And the judge regurgitates those lies and uses those lies to throw you out of court. Seen it. I can't even tell you how many times I've seen it. So the federal rules of appellate procedure, on a particular date, a panel of this court, sua ponte, dismissed a separate appeal brought by pro se plaintiff and concluded an arguable basis, either in law or in fact, quotes the case. In that case, which the district court accepted as related to this one, plaintiff made similar arguments, and they didn't in this case, about the unconstitutionality of the federal tax system. Now, the case that was coming in was a due process case, and also a Fifth Amendment case and a Fourth Amendment case, had nothing to do with trying to decide whether the IRS was a corporation or part of the government or whatever the case may be. Okay? So, again, a lie, and they respond by letters, and then we have to respond by affidavit to destroy this letter, prevent that judge from using the language here to throw the case out and not be heard. Now, there is a process that's called comity, okay? And that's what this is, comity, in the sense that they use cases that are similar to your case and say the judge ruled this way, and therefore this case must be thrown out. Okay, because they threw it out there, you got to throw this case out here. And that's called comity. In other words, they rely upon trial court decisions. And it's full. And again, this particular thing is full of lies. It has nothing to do. There is a common law maxim which states a thing similar is not necessarily the same thing, period. Okay, so it's the same as England adopted. We have the common law as it was in England. It's under natural law. In interpreting the federal constitution, recourse may still be had to the aid of the common law of England. It has been said that without reference to the common law, the language of the federal constitution cannot be understood. Therefore, since constitutions must be construed to reference the common law, summary proceedings would deny petition the Seventh Amendment right to a trial by jury and thereby would be repugnant, rendering any such decisions null and void. Then we put Amendment 7, in suits of common law where the value of the controversy shall exceed $20, the right of a trial by jury shall be preserved, and no fact tried by a jury shall be otherwise reexamined in any court of the United States in accordance to the rules of the common law. The New York State Department of Motor Vehicle rules and regulations, do you put your state? Again, you have to think about this. And again, you can get rid of the traffic stuff and put in any kind of a code violation, any kind of a statutory process that would be operating really in any court, actually. But specifically in town courts, village courts, even city courts, and of course traffic courts. The New York State Department of Motor Vehicle rules and regulations apply only when a person is operating a motor vehicle for commercial purposes. When the aforesaid person registers with the DMC, that's the plaintiff, by the way, or the person that's really wanting them to respond, the respondents, operating a motor vehicle for commercial, only when a person, when the aforesaid person registered with the DMV and is issued a driver's license, he at the time agrees to the commercial rules and regulation when they engage in the transportation of goods or people for commercial purposes. But when the aforesaid person is traveling without a fare or goods, in other words, without commercial purposes, they are not in need of a driver's license, nor are they liable to answer to a nisi prius court. The following four Supreme Court cases solidify the aforesaid. It is the essence of American liberty, the unalienable right to control our own behavior. So, so this driver's license, you know, I've got a driver's license, and I have driven commercially in the past, and who knows, I may do it again. And it's a good idea anyway, so I have a driver's license. And if they tell me, well, you agreed, I didn't agree. I agreed only when I drive commercially. I'm not driving commercially, so they can't give me a ticket. I think I further make this case, so let's read on. The use of highways and these are Supreme Court rulings in different states, and there's one U.S. Supreme Court here. The use of the highway for the purpose of traveling and transportation is not a mere privilege, but a common fundamental right of which the public and individuals cannot rightfully be deprived. Another one, the right of the citizen to travel upon the public highways and to transport his property thereon, either by carriage or by automobile, is not a mere privilege which a city may forbid or permit at will, but a common law right, which he or she has under the right of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Another case, the right to travel is a part of liberty of which the citizen cannot be deprived without due process of law under the Fifth Amendment. And of course, they don't have that power or authority. The next is the right to travel is a well-established common right that does not owe its existence to the federal government. It is recognized by the courts as a natural right. So therefore, it could not be stated more directly or conclusively that citizens of the states have a common law right to travel unimpeded without approval, that's without a license, or restriction, that's codes, and that this right is protected under the United States Constitution. This court lacks jurisdiction. Administrative court, the Uniform Traffic Ticket, see attached, refers to New York State Department Motor Vehicles, suggesting that this court is an administrative court, which would thereby be a nisi prius court. Nisi prius means unless first, and that means if you don't, you have to first agree. And when you go into court, you make your plea, you just agree to that court. And if the judge puts it in for you and you don't object to that, then you agree to that court. And that's why a lot of people will find that they'll go try to make this argument, and maybe not necessarily the way we do it, but however they might do it. And there's lots of ways to do it. And this is the most powerful. But in any event, they'll make their argument, and they'll find themselves coming back over and over and over again, month after month, back to the traffic court, back to the thing, back to the same argument, going over and over for months. We've had a case helping someone out, must have 6 or 7 times back to the court. What are they trying to do? They're trying to get jurisdiction over you. They're trying to make you to agree. That's what they're trying to do. I only go once. Send the paper in, really, that's only once, but maybe I won't go in the second time. Maybe I'll just move it to federal court for cause, and that'll be that. But I might go in just one time just to reiterate what I've already said to some degree and make my threats, because I do make a couple of threats in here in a very nice way, though. So anyway, let's go back. Thereby, nisi prius court. Since the, whatever court it is an administrative court, petitioner objects to the process. If the petitioner's commercial driver's license therein called client ID number, you'll find that on your driver's license as client ID number, was used to establish an agreement to the administrative process, the code enforcement officer and this court is mistaken because the petitioner was not operating commercial vehicle for commercial services at the time the petitioner was prudently traveling along a public road, and when the petitioner was stopped and asked to see a driver's license, petitioner ascertained that it would be prudent to comply without protest. I never argue with a cop. Since this court is acting in its administrative court capacity, it lacks personal jurisdiction for the aforesaid reasons. Criminal court. Now, sometimes they'll call them criminal court, sometimes they'll call them justice court. Matter of fact, my town court not long ago took down the word justice off the court. I scratch my head on why they do. I know probably why they're doing it, but they're not going to admit to it because it's not a justice court to begin with. So anyway, criminal court. Sometimes you'll see a court that does say or refer to itself as a criminal court. Criminal court. The supporting deposition, see attached, states the court to be a criminal court. Criminal courts proceed according to statutory law. Jurisdiction and procedure is defined by statutes. Likewise, civil courts and admiralty courts proceed according to the statutory law. Any court proceeding according to the statutory law is not a court of record, which only proceeds according to the common law. It is an inferior court. Remember, we opened a court of record on top of this court, which makes it more powerful court. And we'll talk about that in the future, the powers and the authorities of the people. The power of writ. if this court is acting in its criminal court capacity, sometimes they do put you in jail for a traffic violation of some kind. Driving under the influence, okay, they can put you in jail for that. And there are certain things they will put you in jail up to a year for. Well, they don't have that power or authority. They're nisi prius courts. So, but anyway, if this court is acting in its criminal court capacity, it lacks personam jurisdiction because it is a nisi prius court and the petitioner has not agreed. Justice court, whatever the court name is, claims authority under your county court, Dutchess County in my case, which constitutionally provides for equity and not for law. Simply put, the tribunals in equity courts are elected or appointed judges, while the tribunals in law courts are the people, also known as juries. These law courts are called courts of record that proceed according to the natural law, liberated from statutes. Since this court is acting as an equity court, it lacks personam jurisdiction over the petitioner because it is operating as an equity court, and unless the petitioner was engaged in some commercial activity that this court might have subject matter jurisdiction, petitioner was not. If this court is acting as a court of law, which both the U.S. and the New York State Constitution and state legislators deny that it is, it lacks personam jurisdiction over the petitioner. The natural law of liberty of man is to be free from any superior power on earth, and not to be under the will of legislative authority of man, but only to have the law of nature for his rule, Samuel Adams. Under federal law, which is applicable to all states, the U.S. Supreme Court stated that if a court is without authority, its judgments and orders are regarded as nullities. They are not voidable, but simply void, and form no bar to a recovery resort, even prior to a reversal in opposition to them. They constitute no jurisdiction, they constitute no justification, and all persons concerned in executing such judgment or sentences are considered in law as trespassers. See, that's the beginning of what you're going to apply against them. They're trespassing. And that's why you're going to sue them for denial of due process, for bringing you into a court of unknown jurisdiction. They hijack you into a court of unknown jurisdiction, and they trespass upon your rights in the law. And here's where the threat comes in. Wherefore, petitioner denies, and I do it subtly, I think, the petitioner denies this court's personam jurisdiction and moves the whatever court to cease and desist from all unlawful actions against the petitioner. Disobedience of the law will force the petitioner to move to federal court for cause and sue for denial of due process. Should your court decide to unlawfully pursue prosecution, said complaint, the petitioner demands that all officers of said court place on the record their oaths, their bond financials as prescribed by law. So they have to digest that a little bit. Then, of course, it's signed and you get a notary and so on. Okay, so the final. Hang on 1 second. All right, sorry. Okay, let me get back to the final paper. I believe it's a short paper and an affidavit of fault. I got also some traffic court argument points that can make if you do go into the court. But an affidavit of default, okay, is once they don't answer within their 30 days, then you're going to put an affidavit of default. This is a one-pager, and it's very specific. Again, the ticket is attached, affidavit of default. This is sworn statement, your state, your county. Your name, affiant here and after. Petitioner being of lawful age, qualified and competent to testify to having firsthand knowledge of the following facts, do hereby swear that the following facts are true, correct, and not misleading. Whereas on a date, whatever the date is, petitioner filed a notice of motion challenging jurisdiction in above said court and served the respondent, which is city, town, village, whatever, prosecutor who has failed to plea and defend the above said case. The record shows that the prosecutor made no return, nor requested more time to answer, nor provided any objections to the proceedings. Therefore, a summary judgment for default is in order. Default judgment and entering a default when a party against whom a judgment for affirmative relief is sought has failed to plea or otherwise defend. Now, this is their law, and this is under federal rules. And there are state for the same thing, but you can use the federal rules. And that failure is shown by affidavit or otherwise under seal, the clerk must enter the party's default. So this goes to the clerk, and you're expecting a response. When I send my paperwork in, I put a self-addressed envelope, and I put an extra copy of the front page, and I fold it up with the envelope, put a stamp on it, and then put a little note to stick a note on it for them to send a copy back to me, which is time-stamped. So it gets this stamp on it, and it's time-stamped. Do the same thing also with a default judgment. You're demanding that. They have to obey these things, and they're going to have a big problem if they don't. And now you can go into federal court and get a whole bunch of money on this thing, and we'll talk about that in another time, too. But anyway, this must be notarized. Everything you do is to be notarized. Okay, that brings us to the end of that. And just to make a note before we open up to an open forum here, and we may go a little over time because we spent quite a bit of time talking, or I did anyway, but just to make a note next week we're going to be talking about approaching the sheriff and how we can take back our schools, how we can take back our counties, our towns, our villages, and our cities. Okay? And again, a lot of this is already written up, but we're going to go through this, and it's important for people to know how to take control of the government. In order to have government by consent, you have to know these things, and we have to take care of it on the grassroots level, in the county level. So we're going to be talking further about this next week. So anyway, let's see if we have people in the queue. We have a few people. Anybody wants to get into the queue, a star 6 and a 1 if you're on a phone, and or if you're on an app, you should see a sign into the queue, you know, a little button or something. Okay, we'll take our first caller. Let's see, it is a 971.
Here's my question.
Give us your first name. Your state.
Hey, good evening. This is Carl Schreiner from Oregon.
Carl from Oregon. Go right ahead, Carl.
Yeah. So obviously you guys believe in the right of liberty through locomotion.
Oh, of course.
The orphan's right.
Everything is a right. I can do whatever I want. I can make my rights up as I go, as long as I don't injure another person. I decide what I want to do and what I don't want to do, as long as I don't violate or injure another person. It's that simple. That's what
liberty is. Amen. I like it, brother. I've been doing this for about 8 or 9 years and listening to a show for about 11 or 12 years from a fellow down in Texas. You might have heard of him. You may not have heard of him. Fell down in Texas.
What's his name?
Can I mention names?
Sure.
Mr. Eddie Craig's Monday Night Traffic Show.
Oh, no, I haven't heard. Gerard, have you heard of him?
I've been listening to him for about 11 or 12 years. He's the one that got me started.
All right. Well,
defending my right of liberty through locomotion. It's not the right to travel. It has nothing to do with the sovereign citizen movement. It's the right of liberty through locomotion, period.
Well, that's key, and it sounds interesting. Maybe you can send that information to mail, M-A-I-L, at nationallibertyalliance.org. Give us so we can go look in and see what's going on. And if you're interested in, you know, we're looking for leadership here at National Liberty Alliance. More importantly, we're looking for leadership in your own county with committees of safety, which are free and independent. We don't control them at all. The purpose of National Alliance is to educate, provide communications and a venue for conversations, specifically for state, you know, people with statewide problems or U.S., you know, 50 statewide problems. So we discuss things and maybe come up with numerous solutions, and then the committees of safety, they make their own decision how they're going to deal with that problem. You know, once you have someone at the national level trying to control the people on the grassroots level, you're no longer grassroots and you're no longer free and independent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've been doing this for about 11 years, and it took about a good 6 or 7 years, but finally, through all the things that you're similarly talking about, following all the motions into court, challenge the subject matter jurisdiction, all of that, challenging where they got this from, where does it say anywhere in the statutes that I have an obligation to follow the traffic code, vehicle traffic code in my state? Where do they have that particular court have any jurisdiction? Where's any contract that I owe them any money if I don't obey them in a city court? We have what she is. She's not a traffic commissioner, but she's she's an attorney that they contracted from out of town for our city to run the municipal court. And she is not a traffic commissioner, but she's a hearings administrative officer. I believe that's what it is for the city. That's what I believe what her title is. Mm-hmm. And she's not really a lawyer. She's just an attorney. So I challenge that too. I challenge, where's her oath? I found out from a good friend of mine that none of these attorneys, speaking of attorneys, have oaths on file that you can even find. They take them after their file and they're shredded.
Yeah, they hide them. That's the problem. And, you know, even they'll say, oh, we don't have oaths, or they'll really say bonds. They'll talk about bonds. We don't have bonds. But they have to have a bond somewhere, otherwise they can't hold an office. And so it's just... Right. Somewhere, you know, that's why on the end of this paper we're looking, if you want to continue this case, now all officers of the court, which is all the lawyers, the prosecutor, the judge, they have to put onto the record their oath, their bonds, and their financials. That's all required by law.
Right.
And they have to put onto the record, and we're going to use that to go after their bonds, and we're also going to take them into federal court for cause to defeat them and have them
exist,
and also go after them for real money. So, you know, I like to know thousands, $1,000 of real money, which is silver coins.
Exactly.
Morgan.
Hey, John, I do have a question about that. Is there any statute of limitations on fraud by the government being applied on people? Is there any statute of limitations on that?
In common law, there are no statutes. The only thing that limitates a case from going forward is the degrading of the evidence. If you don't have the evidence, if it degrades over a 20, 30-year period or whatever the case may be, obviously you can't win a case because you've lost your evidence, people died or whatever, witnesses and so on. But as far as statutes, there are no statutes. You can literally take something 50 years from now. As long as you've got your witnesses and all your documentation and proof, you can sue at any point in time.
So retroactively, I could sue them going back, you know, 7 or 8, 9 years.
I have a whole list of cases that I've done and I'm planning on going back. We have hundreds of cases we've done on behalf of other people. We're going to be going into the federal courts probably in the beginning of next year, possibly depending on devolution and when it plays out and when we'll have the opportunity to go into a court and take control of the court. We'll take control of the federal court, and then we're going to pursue all these people who have lost homes and people who have lost things, and we're going to go after them all.
I've been pretty lucky. I've never paid any of their fines. For the most part, they never sent the fine to me through the mail when she made her opinion. You know, check this out. Very key in legalese here. She made her opinion that I was guilty of these.
That's a crime. That's charges. A crime going through the mail, too, now, because they're not a court of law, and they're demanding money, and that falls under RICO. And it falls under also the code that's I forget the code, but there's a code that applies to them, of course, concerning, fraud to the mail.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly what the fellow down in Texas talks about. Same thing. You can file all of these as a RICO racketeering, you know, charges. You bring up the RICO laws against them.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, great. Yeah, I'd love to send an email to you.
If you're interested in starting a committee of safety, I don't know if you're early enough, and we'll be talking more about it. As a matter of fact, in our earlier Monday night, a couple of weeks ago, let's see, Monday night open forum videos, let me open that up. We have, access common law, regular court access and the common law open forum high alert, no, that's the sheriff. Okay, I guess nothing right here. Maybe down a little further we might have something, but we'll be covering it anyway. You know. So, but if you want to get involved and start a committee of safety, just click on start a committee of safety and get some things going in your county to take back this country from the grassroots level. So, and anybody that wants to put some time in and volunteer on the national level here with National Liberty Alliance, we do need a lot of help. So.
Okay. Excellent. Yeah, I'll definitely do that. I'll check that out and get in there if I can start a committee. I will read into that. Now I go to NLA.org is where I can find that, where I can do that.
If you go to NLA, you'll go to the National Lawyers Association. So they got that before.
Okay.
So we don't
lawyers.
Yeah, that's not us. So you have to go to National Liberty Alliance. You have to spell it out. NationalLibertyAlliance.org.
Got it. Got it.
And next time you try to come on with an app on your cell phone or come in on your browser. You can come in on your browser. You can come in on an app that you can download onto your computer. And this way, we are desktop and what we're talking about as we go through our conversations.
Yeah. That's great. Well, I'm glad to found you guys. A friend of mine said that you talk a lot of things that are similar about what the other broadcaster talks about. So he told me to give you a listen and share your thoughts and ideas.
We also talk a lot about the fraud that they're committing, but we don't use it because in their fraud they give ways that people can use in order to do something about it, and we don't go through that process because that's their process. We just take it right to common law, right to natural law, and deal with it there.
Okay.
And call a fraud. Gotcha. That's what it is. A fraud is a fraud, period.
Exactly. Well, great that I got in. Great to meet you. I'm happy. I'm glad to be able to put in my two cents. And it's my first time calling. I listened a couple of times, haven't been able to get in before, but I'm glad I was able to get through tonight. I haven't had any problems in the last couple of 3 years. They refuse to pull me over anymore. I mean, I've had units pull up right to my bumper, go through a light, and go down the street, and they back up, and they take off, they go the other way.
Yeah, I've been on different things in my own town, and they don't give me tickets anymore either because I have already
right. paid.
So maybe they, I presume it's just that, hey, leave this guy alone because he's a pain in the neck to us, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. That's a good thing.
I like that. Their pain is my gain.
Yep. All right. Well, thanks for the call, and hopefully you get involved as time goes on. You'll see what we're doing. And look, go to our welcome tab right in the beginning when the first thing you come in. We did a seminar, and it's recorded, and it's similar to the seminar that you want to do on a county level when you bring, when you want to come and get a committee of safety going. And
right.
you listen to ours, the seminar, NLA's Plan to Save Our Republic. It is long. It's 3 hours, and you can don't have to watch all at one time. But it's pretty powerful. It lays out exactly what we're doing and how we're doing it and how people are organizing on their county levels and how we are here as a venue. For a place to come, people get communicating with each other, and also because you have to build committees of correspondence within your committees of safety. You have to communicate with other committees of safety in the other counties around you and within your state, and even state to state, and also we need to discuss issues and try to all get on the same page. I mean, we can't make anybody get on the same page, but we'll offer different things we can do so we're working together. To solve the same problem. Agenda 21
is the
problem. We're going to solve that in federal courts, though. Once we take back the federal courts.
You bet. Okay, I'm on the main page here. Looks really nice. It looks like an official sealed page here. It says National Liberty Alliance and kind of like the old English style here. And it says down here on the bottom here, start a committee of safety.
Right.
So I'm going to go ahead and go with that, and I'll check it out. And do whatever I need to do on that. Okay, so, all right. Well, a few minutes before the end of the time of the hour here, thank you very much for taking my call tonight. And I'm glad to be able to get a little bit, find out that you could be an alternate to my ride of liberty through locomotion and, of course, stopping the fraud and everything that you want to do and developing a safety commission and helping others.
Yeah, send us that page where you're getting information, that website or whatever it is, and we'll go take a look at it too. I know other people here will like to look at that on a national level, national leadership.
Okay.
And maybe, we can incorporate some of the stuff they're using over there. So,
All right.
Maybe even talk together. Who knows?
That's wonderful. Wonderful. Well, great talking to you, John. I'm going to get busy on looking at it and doing those things, and I'll get back to you on a later date.
Thank you. Okay.
All right. Have a good night. God bless. Thank you, sir.
All right. Next caller. Let's see. What is this? Jaman? I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right. North Carolina? Jerman. Jaman. North Carolina. You got the mic. Last call for Jermaine from North Carolina. You got the mic. Okay, maybe they walked away from their computer. All right, let's take our next caller. Dawn, you got the mic. What's your state? Dawn, you got the mic. What's your state?
Okay, sorry, I didn't hear you. It's Dawn from Orange, California. Hey, California. John, I'm not sure if you are aware when you were going through all those forms and stuff like that, like it wasn't sharing on your screen. You, like, we just heard you reading. I mean, we saw the National Liberty Alliance and we watched you open them, but we never saw the documents. Oh. I'm not sure if you,
Eric, Jan, Terry, Gerard, any of you people, did you see, you saw the documents as we were sharing them? Anybody up there? All right, well, maybe other people can tell us whether they saw it or not, because I was sharing the screen all that time.
I know, and you were. It looked like you were, but it wasn't showing that way. I actually got a call from a friend of mine in a different state asking me the same question. So just...
All right, well, as we get next callers, I'm interested to know if they were able to see it. We have never had that problem before, and, you know, we were sharing it, but I don't know why it wouldn't have come through. I'll find out in the video also when I upload it. So, all right, anything else?
I raised my hand. I was like, oh, I wish there was a chat so I could say something in a chat.
Well, you know, we have the ability to put a chat out there, but the problem is people go all over the place, and, you know, we want people that are really focused in on the conversation, and that's why we don't have a chat on. And I've been to a lot of places, seen a lot of things going on, and there's so many people, distractions going on, and people doing different things, and negativity sometimes, and it just doesn't work for what we're trying to do. We're trying to educate the people. We're trying to communicate with the people. So, you know, people need to get together on their grassroots level in their counties, and that's where they really need to be communicating, and that's what we're really trying to really push forward onto the people. Get connected with people in your county. Let's take back this nation. All politics is local, and we can take back the political process. We should understand the political process, all without the politics. We have a plan to get rid of the Republican and the Democratic Party. Get rid of all parties. There's nothing more destructive to a republic than parties. Parties are divisive. George Washington, in his farewell address, spent at least two-thirds of his farewell address talking about the problems and the damages that parties will do, and that parties will be the destruction of this nation. And indeed it is. You know, Jefferson thought the courts would be the destruction of this nation, and I think they're both, well, I don't think they're both, I know they're both right. They've destroyed a judicial process, and they've destroyed a political process. So we have to get rid. Parties do not belong, okay? People need to send people to represent their positions according to the law, according to the Constitution, the powers and the authorities we gave to them, and they shouldn't be getting together in a party form and just get one against the other. It's just nothing but a battle and destruction. That's all it is. Anything else, Dawn?
No, that's it. I just was like letting you know that we didn't see the documents, but I found the location of the documents that you were trying to show to us.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, and again, I'll check that out. And anybody else that wasn't seeing it that was coming in with an app, maybe you can let us know. You know, the best way to come in here is an app on your computer, or you can come in on your browser too. There's a way to come in on your browser. When you go to the Monday Night Call page, there are instructions to join us by phone, app, or browser. So there's different ways to get in here. But this probably the best way is to come in on the Start Meeting app, okay? And all you have to do is type in NLA, which is that's the online meeting ID. We don't have any kind of a code to get in. Just have to you download the app, you put NLA, put your first name and your state, and you click enter, and you're in. So, okay, thank you, Dawn. We'll take our next caller. Okay, 734, give us your first name and your state. You got the mic. 734 area code, you got the mic. First name and your state. Last four digits is 6596. You got the mic. Last call.
Nancy in Michigan.
Nancy in Michigan. Go right ahead, Nancy.
Okay. I got your number from Chief Kamala Smiling Thunder, and we're focusing on mortgages, tickets, and debt collection, that kind of stuff.
Wow.
I was sitting in a parked car. I got hit by a gravel hauler. I was unconscious in the hospital. I've spent like 7 or 8 weeks in VA hospital after I did the other hospitals. I got in the mail 3 or 4 tickets, a warrant for my arrest, court dates, and collection notices for the fire truck that cut me out of the car. Over the years, I've done some stuff on common law. I got about 30 or 40% of it to work, and the rest has not. I want to pick up where I left off and then finish this, and I also want to help other people. And my friend Cliff and I, we're doing mostly vets, and with Kamala, we're going to do American Indians. But I'm interested in picking up the pieces that you have to make what I did work. And other people are going to need this too.
Yeah, we do touch on non-judicial foreclosures in our court access and the common law course. So you might be interested in that. And, you know, the securitization of mortgages and tax foreclosures are white-collar swindles. So they're illegal, okay?
Yes.
Primarily because it violates the antitrust laws. And so we do teach on that. We talk about non-judicial foreclosures. We talk about traffic issues. And we just that was an update on traffic issues that we taught in the course that I put back into the course. And we also put it up on our website. But people who are interested in our court course, okay, you can find that under Education Starts Here. Click on Court Access in the Common Law course. And again, you get all the information you need to join the course. You know, we have a lot of free courses at National Liberty Alliance. We have a constitutional course. We have a civics course. These are free courses. I think we've got 3 or 4. We have a militia course that are free. Now, we have a couple of courses. One of them is, Committee of Safety. No, not Committee of Safety. There is a course, Government by Consent course. So for that course, and also we have a course for those people who want to become administrators for the jury. Now, in order to get into those two courses, and I think there's another course that also, we ask people to be a premier member. And a premier member is someone given $5 a month or more supporting what we're doing, and then they're a premier member. Now, if someone really can't afford that $5, we're all about education. Just get a hold of Jan at nationallibertyalliance.org. Let them know that you can't afford the $5, and we'll make you a premier member anyway. Because education is the key thing. But we do need support. We need financial support, of course, to keep the lights on and the doors open, so to speak. So we survive on that $5 a month for the people who are doing that. But then there is the other course that we have, and it's a 90-hour course. It's like going to law school. When you go through that, we believe we teach more in this course than you'd learn if you went to a bar school. And yet we breeze upon what all these problems are with statutes and codes and how to defend against them, and we'll be adding more information on that too to this course, because we have a couple of cases we're doing right now that I think are very powerful. And so it's new information. We'll share those court papers. And so that particular course is the only course we really charge for. And we charge, I think it's $125. Yeah, $125. But it's a $100,000 course in the sense that you're getting a real education. You go into these courts, you know, it can be as simple in a traffic court by just following the paperwork I gave and some basic realization. We also have a paper there at that page which gives some, you know, positions and thoughts and ideas you could bring up if you're in court, okay? But they don't even understand how the court system works on the village and town level and the traffic court level. They totally have no understanding or knowledge of any law. But in any event, if you're going to go into courts and make a battle, if you're going to go in court and you're going to deal with non-judicial foreclosures, habeas corpuses, or you're defending yourself in a criminal case, or if you're suing an agency, you don't want to sue an agency because that's suing yourself. You want to sue the people who violated their authority that they were given in that agency. So you sue the individual. And, you know, if you want to do those kind of things and you want to protect yourself in court from them coming and making a complaint against you for something, then you really need to understand how the courts are structured, how they work, how court process works. Due process is the process going through a court of law, and that's the right of due process from the beginning to the end. You have to know when the judge is out of line and stepping out of line and abusing their power. You have to know when a jury has been fully informed or not. You have to understand the paperwork that goes through the process of moving the court. And we cover all those forms. All those things are done by forms. And you can create your own forms, too. You don't have to follow their forms. Maybe the basic guideline of their forms, of course. But, you know, you make your own. We do all the time. I make my own forms up. But we have a lot of forms up there. But there is a process to open a court of record. You know, you have to give a summons. You know, you have to follow the necessary paperwork, and you have to know the procedure, and you have to know the powers and the authorities. And if you don't know those things, and you don't understand the terms and the games that they play, and you have to understand the words that they use, so you have to use your dictionary, your law dictionary. And if you don't understand those things, you're not going to win too often in court. I mean, you know, really, the way a court of law actually should be working, according to common law, is the only thing necessary for a prima facie case is an affidavit. You don't need anything else, okay? But there is a process. We should follow it. You know, notice it's important to give someone a notice that there's a summons and they get so much time to answer it and proof that it's been delivered. You have to also give them a notice of motion when you move in the court to do something. It's a flag to let the people know, hey, something's happening here. You only got a little bit of time to respond, otherwise you're going to default. So that all is important to understand and to utilize. So then we teach all that stuff. And so anybody wants it, you can get a, you know, $150,000 course for $125. And it'll be there indefinitely. Just to see, under Education Starts Here, Court Access in the Common Law, that's the link to get in. But once you get into the course, you'll have these two tabs. One is the video course itself. Okay, if you click on that. And you'll see all the courses from, it starts at the top. This is part A, first part introduction, all the way through. And these are all of the video courses. Each one of these videos is about 3 hours long. And you can, you know, take your time going through it, or you can push forward on it. We also put it in audio recordings, so you can throw it in your MP3 player or on your phone. You can be listening to it in a day. I got things going in my car. I have all kinds of, you know, MP3s, a lot of Bible studies or a lot of recordings of different people who are teaching things and whatever the case may be. But anyway, you have the MP3s and you have the videos. You should definitely go through the videos, and then to go over it and really put it into your brain. I found MP3s, just listening to them in the background constantly, it really, really works it into your mind, and you're able to articulate it as time goes on. And one other thing, while we're under here, education, we do have Bible studies for anybody interested. We're in the book of Matthew right now, coming up on chapter 4, and we do have all of those studies recorded in video. You can click on the Gospel according to Matthew live, and you can catch up with us. Let's see how many we got. 1, 2, 3. So this is week number 4. We've done 3 weeks already. We meet every Wednesday at 7:30 right here in this room for anybody interested. And we got a lot of Bible studies also. But again, the education on court access and the common law. Also, you'll also find another tab that'll open up when you join the course. It's Court Access Table of Contents. And that gives you all of the information that we're going to cover in this course by chapter. The essentials, the introduction. Talk about the U.S. codes and the constitutions and the Constitution, particularly the U.S. Constitution. We go through the pleadings, the processes, all of the motions, the different things and forms of defenses, memorandums of law, very powerful, the memorandums of law, the rules of the court, the rules of common law. And then we get into a lot of court. We do an IRS case, which I'm going to eventually update, because I think we have a more powerful paper now. You know, you're always learning all the time, and you're always learning more and adding to your knowledge and building upon it. So as we have more information, we'll add that to that, as we did here, the traffic court. And on this course, we also give reference to, you know, places on to Word for beginners. You need to really be able to use Microsoft Word. You also want to be able to use PowerPoints if you're going to go in and argue a case, a particular big case, you want to explain it. So we've got a lot of information in here for anybody interested in being successful in court. But do remember, these people are criminals. Literally, I mean that, not just a statement, they're criminals. They belong in jail, most of them, if not all of them. They're liars, and they do whatever they can to throw you out of court, and it takes a while to figure all that out. And you can learn from our mistakes, which you can go through the course, like I said. But they'll do everything they can to throw you out. But we've learned different ways to put the pressure onto them, and recently we've come to a few new things. We'll be sharing that. But back to you, Nancy.
I was in law school, and I quit because I recognized that they had everything twisted. The Bibles are, or the law's already in the Bible, and they warped it.
Uh-huh.
So I went to one of my assignments at court one day. One of my law professors were there. We go into court, and he was the first one that I ever heard. This guy had robbed a taxi driver, and it was his client, and he got him off by telling the court they didn't have jurisdiction. So I'm listening for the rest of the cases because we had to take notes. I get back to class the next day. The teacher wanted to know what cases were cited for him, you know, for all the different attorneys' clients. And we were supposed to look them up. When I told her that I couldn't find any of them in the law books or online or anything, she laughed and she said, you're the first one that came in here and admitted that everything those attorneys said was a lie. None of those cases existed.
Exactly. Exactly. And people need to realize that. First of all, I have a blanket statement for that and a couple of paragraphs I put under and describe what they know what it is. It's comedy. COMITY.
Yep.
which is the resting upon trial cases. The only cases that have any merit or power or authority is the Supreme Court cases on a higher level. But even with them, they could be null and void. And remember, statutes have nothing to do with us. And we don't use, common law does not use cases, you know, because this judge ruled this way in that case. This is comity, C-O-M-I-T-Y. You know, because that judge ruled that way, this way, judge, you need to rule this way also. And so they're really just relying on their own things that they make up. They make up their rules. They change their rules as you go on. They'll quote cases and say things that don't really say in any way. You know, maybe when I used to look these cases up, and I don't bother looking the cases up because they have nothing to do with me, and I make that point very clear. The things similar, necessarily the same thing. But when I used to look it up, we've had cases where they would quote a case, we'd go look it up, and they only quoted part of what was said. And when you go on further, you say, whoa, wait a second, this case backs our side up, what we have to say. They do that all the time. Lawyers, I'm telling you, it's like they train them to lie. They are liars and deceivers so severely, so bad, I can't even tell you how bad it is. And I call them out now on the paper. I call it for what it is. I try not to use the word liar, but that's what they do. We talk, and I even tell the judge, you know, if you're going to regurgitate these lies and throw us out on these lies, then you're just fulfilling. We have an affidavit. I have an affidavit of truth. They don't have no affidavit. They never come in with affidavits. And then when the person that they're representing, they come in an affidavit for them. That's secondhand. That's hearsay. It means nothing. And I make that point, too. It's nothing. Because, look, let the person come in. Let them be liable to potentially lying on a court record and having some kind of a legal process against them for that, you know.
Yep.
But, you know, because the lawyer says so, hey, and they made the affidavit on their client's behalf, it means nothing in a court of law. There are a lot of other things, you know, criminal cases, you know, they have to prove intent. You could kill somebody, and if you didn't have intent on killing, you'll hear, for instance, a vehicular homicide, and people will maybe get jail sentences for that. Well, look, if you had an accident, you didn't plan on doing that. You didn't have intent to kill somebody. Therefore, there is no criminal case against you. Could be a civil case against you. You know, maybe you were negligent and someone died in that, and that's why we have insurance and stuff. But nevertheless, you could be held liable civilly, but you cannot be held liable criminally. And I never see that all the time. There's a case I bring up from time to time of a woman who left a child in a car and went to do something and then forgot the child was in the car and was doing some shopping and different things. When they came back, the windows were closed, it was a hot day, and the child died. That the woman was taken and went to court, and she was found guilty, and I don't know how many years she got. But guilty of what? Did that woman plan? Did they prove that that woman planned to kill her baby? Because there's no criminal intent there. You see, people need to realize there has to be intent. I know some recent cases, I just can't think of it off the hand, but that I've heard recently about people that go to jail for something, and I say there's no way that they proved there was any intent there. There was no intent there. So again, we need to understand these things, and we need to be able to defend ourselves, and we need to get this into schools. Children, by the time they come out of the high school, they should know they should know the Constitution, the Bill of Rights. They should know how to go into a court of law, defend themselves, write their own papers. They need to be able to know how to speak. They need to know how to handle a weapon. They need to know how to drive a motor vehicle. This should all be done in school. By the time they come out of high school, they should know all these things and have the abilities to do all these things. Okay? And this is where we have to go with the schools. We have a plan for that. We're going to talk more about that in the future and get into details how we can execute those things. But it's up to the people to do it on a grassroots level. If you don't do it, how's it going to get there? And we all have to do it. You know, Thomas Jefferson said, we don't have government by the majority. We have government by the majority that participates. And I can tell you right now, there's not a lot of people participating that maintain the control of a political process. If we can get 40, 50 people in every county, and believe me, we'll show you how to grow into hundreds and thousands real quick, But if we can get 20 to 30 to 40 people in every county exercising their right of government by consent, getting active, holding these people's feet to the fire, taking care of business, we wouldn't have any of these problems. And we truly have liberty, liberty that we wouldn't have to worry about being them trying to take us to court for exercising our liberty. So,
Right. Again,
if the people expect to be ignorant and free, as Thomas Jefferson said, they're looking for something that never was and never will be. Forget about it. You can't have it. Can't have ignorance and liberty at the same time. It does not exist.
Right.
Back to you, Nancy. We're going to move on to the next person. You got anything final?
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we're going to take Mike. You got the mic. Mike, what state you from?
California.
Mike from California. Go right ahead.
Okay. On the mortgage end of things, when hopefully this whole devolution thing's come about, I'd love to be in that journey with you. I've been in real estate and loans for 30 years, was one of the only brokers who was writing in to all the regulators, legislators about the rampant mortgage fraud, and we're here in Silicon Valley. It just was insane what was going on. I was like, you guys are going to just destroy the financial system. And since then, I've been down this journey of finding out some of the information that you've had on your sites and with others on how corrupt this corporate system has become. And it almost was intentional to bankrupt the corporate state or these corporate governments, I think, to bring in the New World Order.
Well, absolutely, and that started in 1913. I mean, it was really before that. It goes over back to the Organic Act of 1871, where they started their construction of their law, their statutory processes, and just destroying. And actually, look at the purpose of bar attorneys. They have a purpose. They were created before 1750. They came to the colonies in 1750 for the sole purpose to destroy the common law, the judicial process here in the colonies. And they've been at it ever since. They haven't stopped. They also destroyed our political process. And they write all our legislation. And through the legislation, they've destroyed our political process. They've destroyed our judicial process. They gave powers and authorities to the Supreme Court to write their own rules and to abrogate the common law rules. And of course, the Supreme Court themselves really didn't write this. This was already pre-written by bar attorneys on the highest level. The whole plan to destroy America was written a long time ago. And over time, they just keep putting in this information, these acts, these statutes and different things, all to destroy America. And we're at the end of it. We're at the end of time as far as America is concerned. We're about to fall and lose it forever. Liberty gone. And thank God we have Trump here, who has created a problem for these people, and we're about to take them out. The only way, of course, is the military. And again, like I said, you can learn about this under today's issues. Come down to Devolution and also Q News and on. And those are two pages. We have a lot of information concerning what's going on behind the scenes. But in any event, once we get it back, which will be by the end of this year, the beginning of next year, because the military is ready to move, they have been watching what's going on for a long time and trying to decide on how to fix this problem. But once that happens, then it's up to the people to take control. Otherwise, if we don't fill the void of taking care of our government by our consent, someone has got to do it. And who do you think is going to do it? These people that we put into office that are politicians and not statesmen, they're the ones that's going to do it. We're going to be back right here again. It's only a matter of time. So, people want to be ignorant and free, and forget about it. Not going to happen.
Court case. It was actually in federal court. It was the first case I ever did. Went against a bunch of the lenders and for RICO and investment bankers, the rating agencies, everything else. And even prior to that, when I was writing into the regulators, it resulted in a proposed rulemaking. And out of the 60 people, other executives that wrote in on that, I was the only one of the dissenting view that, hey, it's not a good idea to give out 100% financing to people who don't document their income. But as the broker, I was still liable to qualify those people, but they changed their guidelines that, oh, you don't have to submit with income documentation, while the lenders would come in, encourage my agents to commit loan fraud, felony loan fraud. And it now and then fast forward to COVID and the exact same, you know, playbook played out for the doctors and, you know, injecting these vaccines or, you know, bioweapons. It's just nuts and nobody's done anything about it. It's like, what's it going to take for people to wake up and rise up? I don't know.
We have to, they seize control of every part of our government and every part of our courts. They totally control everything. They control state legislators. They control a lot of governors. They control the president of the United States. They control our legislators and our senators on the federal level. They have total control over that. And the people now are finally seeing it because Trump has put them in a position that they're revealing themselves. This is all planned to reveal them, and so people are waking up, but they're saying there's nothing we can do. They've got the guns, they got the FBI, they got the judiciary, they got the justice system, they got it all, and we can't do nothing. Our hands are tied. The only thing we could do is take it to the streets, and we don't want to do that. But if it came to push to shove, at some point it would come to that. But again, there is a plan. There is a plan that Trump has made with the military, and we are going to take this nation back. It's a matter of time, and it's just that more people need to wake up. That's why it's taking time. Our economic system is about to totally collapse, we're heading for war. Trump keeps talking about it. He's been talking about it for about a year and a half now, and there's going to be some nuclear exchange. It's going to happen somewhere, or a nuclear scare somehow. Maybe it'll be intercepted over the ocean or something. I don't know, but all of this is possible and probable and necessary to wake the people up. Unfortunately, it's necessary to wake the people up. You have to have enough people to realize what's going on. And you have to have the people on your side, and that's why Trump has been continuing for years now, talking and going out, bringing his message and waking the people up. And look what they're doing to the president. Look what they're doing to the president. You know, I just saw him on an interview. I'm trying to remember who he was interviewed. Oh, it was Carlson, I think, just recently. And he says, you know, he goes into the court, he says, you know, he's very impressed at certain things because the people that are running the court and the police officers there, you know, the people as far as should be the deputies from the sheriff's office, but in any event, the officers of the court, they all feel bad and they apologize to him. Some of them even crying over it. I mean, it was really an amazing, exchange between Trump and Carson. So, again, people are waking up, and it's coming soon. Justice is coming. And then we will take our courts back. We're prepped for it right now. We are ready to do that.
No, it's atrocious what's happened on both of those issues, the mortgage crisis and foreclosures and then COVID mm-hmm. and everything. But I had a more specific question. We've had some issues with the county, and I did get some oath of office from this grading official. We took out some trees with the tree removal permit. It called for stump grinding 24 inches below the grade. They were really large eucalyptus trees, and the stump grinding wasn't working. It was a hillside. Hired an excavator operator to remove the stumps, and he had extra dirt from another job. He said, hey, if you take this dirt, we can use it to backfill the stumps and, you know, give you a better deal. I said, sure, fine, great. He comes out, and then his excavator blew a seal. So he got a couple stumps out but didn't get any more in. So the county came out and said that the dirt piles that we had staged there were over 150 cubic yards, which they're not. but cited us on a grading violation. And this really has nothing to do with the dirt piles, but they were just frustrating this because we had did a mandamus action. I filed it myself against the county. There was a water tank that was next to us, and a 2-million-gallon water tank they built without a public hearing. And right at that time, we were in the drought, and they said, oh, they're exempt because of the emergency proclamation for the drought, but we'll still make them do everything they need to do. Instead of doing that, they abandoned an easement that was there. They relocated the road, but when they built the road, they made this sharp U-turn in it, and it's like half the width of what it used to be, and it was non-conforming before. So we get through the court. The trial court proceedings were just a sham. The judge wouldn't even allow us to have court reporters. At that time, the state had stopped providing court reporters, so you had to get your own. So we hired one. There was one, you know, that was qualified and everything. And they had a new rule that you had to have the other side stipulate if you were going to share the cost of the report, court reporters. Well, she misinterpreted that or intentionally whatever. So she wanted to allow us to have court reporters unless the county stipulated to an oral record. They didn't. And so she eventually sustained special demurs and uncertainty, even though the county, we found a new grounds to get a hearing is all we were really looking for. And that way the Planning Commission is an independent body would properly condition for all the improvements they were supposed to do. And so the county completely avoided the amended relief we were requesting for, which is under the Subdivision Map Act for an unlawful division of real property is what ended up happening. And she actually referenced, she didn't cite it, but there's a statute of limitation. Had they followed due process, you do have a 90-day statute of limitation after that public hearing, and all those conditions were cited. But since they circumvented it all, that statute of limitation doesn't apply. Well, anyway, we get through to appeal after COVID, and it took forever getting there. The appellate court ended up misapplying the statute of limitation she referenced, even though she was used to be a land use counsel with county council. And I think what ended up happening is she didn't really recognize the harm other than, you know, there was no longer a recorded right-of-way easement against that property, but there was a ton of other issues. And I think she either skated over it or she essentially misapplied it as some pseudo latches or something. But so now we have an enforcement action for these dirt piles that are coming after us. They had forced my wife to sign. I ended up not signing it, but a compliance agreement that had all these fines and fees to reduce the fines and fees. But we never had an appeal for the dirt piles. It was supposed to be with the same body, the Planning Commission. So we never had the appeal, and then they recorded a violation, which seems like in California it's a crime to actually levy fines and fees. It's Penal Code 146, Subdivision B. But anyway, I don't know if you have people that could help out. I'd be happy to pay to try and straighten some of this stuff out.
Well, let me tell you something. If you had a fully informed, educated committee of safety operating in that county, that means, you know, you'd have to have at least one or two people that really understand the law, maybe took our course, but they understand due process, how it works, how the court system works, so on and so forth. But generally speaking, we should all understand the common law. We should all understand the powers and the authorities we vested them with. And when they start to break these rules and laws, because remember, you know, we teach people how to work with the sheriff. You got to get the sheriff educated. You got to get the sheriff on board. And if he's unwilling to become educated and become a real sheriff by applying the law, okay, and not the codes and all those things, but the law, then you get rid of that sheriff. And that could be done by recall. It could be done rather quickly. You can get rid of him in 90 days and bring a vote in for a new sheriff. But you'd have to have a sheriff that's willing to be educated. But most sheriffs really are. They're feeling helpless to a degree because they realize that they really don't know how to battle this and they don't know the law. They're dependent about a bar attorney, the county attorney, to go to that county attorney and get advice from a bar attorney who's the enemy. They're the minions of the New World Order. The purpose of the bar is to destroy this republic, period, end of subject. That is their purpose. And they were initiated here in the colonies to destroy our courts and eventually when we became a nation to destroy our political process as well as our courts. And they've done a good job on both of them. So if you have a committee of safety operating and someone comes in with this problem to the committee of safety and says, and then they start to focus on this. You've got a political committee, you've got a judicial committee. Both of them would be focusing in on that. You have a committee of correspondence. You have quite a few committees. But in any event, you start focusing in on this, and then you hold these people to the fire. We, matter of fact, next week we're going to be talking a little bit on how to take control of our local governments, okay? And but the people have to get educated. They have to spend a little time. You know, some people will spend a lot of time to get educated quick. Mostly people will spend a little time, and over time will become educated. But that Committee of Safety has extreme power. It's called government by consent. You see, our founding fathers controlled everything through committees of safety. They're the original committeemen. The people of the committees of safety are the committeemen. That's who they are. They statutorized that, robbed it from the people, put in party bosses, separated into parties, and then put one side against the other, and they control the whole system. Your county is controlled by five people, chairman, the co-chairman, secretary, and treasurer. They are pan-picked people. And very rarely will you get a county that that the people have taken control of. But even with that, it's only one county, and they still lack knowledge to really be able to take control back. But nevertheless, that's what controls that. Your entire state is controlled by a small handful of people, again, about five people also, which is the chair and the co-chair and so on. And then all the states are controlled, again, on a national level by about five individuals. And they, all of them is controlled by the New World Order ultimately. We'll call it the deep state that they use, the New World Order uses this deep state in order to control. They got their tentacles all the way down into the county level. They've incorporated everything. Your towns, your cities, your villages, your counties, your state, everything is incorporated. The United States of America was incorporated. So they're corporations, and they're operating under municipalities, as municipalities under municipal law, the law of the city, which is Babylonian, which is to enslave the people, to control the people, to fleece the people, to become rich off of this, and eventually destroyed. And we're at that point, live or die, in the next 9 months. That's it. I do believe we're going to be successful for numerous reasons. But nevertheless, we're going to go through some hard times. We're going to see some problems in the streets. There's going to be violence in the streets. There's going to be an uprising. We've got millions of terrorists in this country right now, and they're in the cities, and we are paying for their room, their board. They got credit cards. They got cell phones, and they'll have a place to go to get their weaponry. Thank God the White Hats are aware of all this. A lot of them will be cut off before they get there. But nevertheless, there's going to be problems in the streets this summer. And this is all necessary, unfortunately, to wake enough of the people up where the people will get behind what's going to have to happen. Because what's going to happen is the military to move in, arrest all these people, put a lot of them on the end of a short rope, and the rest of them to jail for as long as we can. And we're going to lose a huge percentage of our government. You know, pretty much when we talk about Republicans and Democrats, we're talking about the people that are in control. And pretty much almost all, if not all of the Democrats are corrupt and belong in jail. But also a high number of Republicans also need to be going to jail or at the end of a short rope, whatever it is that the people decide. There'll be military tribunals. And then, of course, there'll be a lot of court cases. It'll all be televised. But that's where we're heading, and that's where we're coming to. And it's going to be this year. This is the time it's going to be answered one way or the other. And I do believe it's going to be the people's way. But anyway, Mike, I got to move on. If you want to work with us on a national level, you know, send us a note to Jan at nationalliberty.org and tell them, give them your basic information, your phone number, tell them you're interested in helping and how you might be able to help. As far as the court case, you know, we're so overloaded, we can't take anything like that on. I do have court cases in court, my own personal ones, and of course, we're preparing for NLA's big court case, which would be on the federal level to take our judiciary back. We'll be talking about that in the coming weeks to a month, and we'll probably share the court case that we've written, pretty much is written already, but we're going to, you know, we're always adding stuff to it. But once we really get to the point where we feel comfortable, we'll share that court case here at National Liberty Alliance. It'll be a series. It will take quite some time to share the entire case. So we'll probably do a half hour every week when we start doing that for whatever period of time it takes to get it out. But then when we file that case, we intend on taking, and this would be after devolution, and devolution is what I'm talking about, this military movement on this. Once we get to a certain point when we know we can go into the courts and take them back, and then we're going to file the courts and bring them back under the court of common law. And once you take the federal courts back, it's slam dunk for every state, because the federal courts, we can move everything to federal court for cause and just shut them down, and we can put them literally in jail, at least to remove these individuals from office, these judges. You know, judges can be the state legislation can take out the judges in the state level anyway, so they can be impeached and then of course tried by the Senate. That's one end, but again, a lot of those people are criminals, so it's going to be a mess, but it's going to take a little time, but it'll be quite quick, a lot quicker than people realize. I think we can really reset our courts up in a matter of 3 to 6 months once we take our courts back.
It'll take
a while to dwindle down, though.
Good. What, real quickly, how do you do with the bonds?
To get their bonds? Well, we're going to share that.
They're self-insured. They say, because this is like the wealthiest county in the state, but they always say, oh, no, we're self-insured. We're self-insured.
Yeah. Well, what that means basically is they have a collective insurance policy, really. And the problem is some of it's unlawful because they're using the people's money to secure themselves. And therefore, when you go after the bonds, the people are paying for it. And that's unlawful. Now, there are some places, I'm sure, that are doing it right, where they have insurance companies and they do a collective thing. In any event, how do you get their oaths, their bonds, and their financials? How do you get that? We're going to be talking about that next week, because we're going to be talking about, having communications with your sheriff, working things out with your sheriff, and how to take control with your sheriff working with you, how to take control of all your local governments, your county governments, your city governments, your towns, your villages, all of that, your school boards. And how do you get their bonds? Well, we're going to show you next week. We're going to talk about that.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, we'll take our next caller. Thanks, Mike. Allison, you got the mic. What state are you from? Go ahead, Allison. You got the mic.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Hi, I'm Allison in Illinois. Can you hear me okay?
Yep, we can hear you.
Okay. Okay. So Well, I think you kind of answered one of my questions, because the documents, yes, I could not see them. But if I were to join the course, all those documents are in your course? Is that what I understand?
You'll see everything in the course. If you go here, you go to the video recorded, court access recorded course. And every part of the course was recorded. We have the introduction, part A, part B, part C. And then we get chapter one, the essentials, part A, B, C, so on. You know, all of these are videos, and, you know, you can watch them.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, well, I have court tomorrow, so maybe it's traffic court. I don't know. I got charged stupid DUI with the complaint, but it was a whole different situation. And was arguing with a cop. I should have just video recorded myself, but I asked him if he's recording. And that's where all these lies are. They cut the videos. They don't show me asking for video and stuff like that. But anyways, I met another, like, state national guy. He's like, oh, well, you know, the whole fraud in the court, and they turn everything into securities. So he put together this whole book that I mailed into them. We did 1040s. We sent all the stuff to the IRS. So some people call that, like, you know, paper terrorism, like just sending tons of papers. So I have a court tomorrow, and I'm assuming it's just going to get postponed. It's my lawyer withdrawing because he's not defending me, and I finally got him to admit, you know, that his oath to the bar is more important than defending me, his paying client, and he admitted that he has the oath to the bar and the Constitution, which contradict each other, but then he said, well, okay, I can't represent you, and he gave me my money back. So I guess tomorrow he's just withdrawing, but I've sent all the stuff in. I've sent it to the clerk of court, and she mailed me back saying that I should send it to the prosecutor. Well, I sent it to everybody, and I told her, thank you, I accept her dishonor, you know, because she's not filing the paperwork that I sent her, and that's her fiduciary responsibility, correct? And I don't know, looking at your stuff, like, okay, your stuff looks legitimate. I should learn this process for real. I'm just throwing stuff together that somebody else put together for me, and I don't have
That is problematic, and it could cause you a lot of problems, and you have to understand what you're doing. You have to understand what they know. You know, again, every word that they write on a piece of paper concerning you, you have to understand it all from the legal process, from the legal perspective. And this is not really difficult stuff. It's not, you know, it's not rocket science, but it takes time because there's a lot involved with time. And basically, you know, all the things that we put together, you have for reference. You know, I put all my stuff, you know, well, I got all the stuff in the computer, but I also have it in a book form that I put out for my own personal thing. I also wrote a book called Court Access and the Common Law for anyone interested in that. You can find that right here on the right-hand side of the website. There are two major books I wrote. One is Government by Consent. This is a 8.5 by 11 book. It's hardcover, and it's only $39.95. I also wrote a book, Court Access in the Common Law, which also is about 560 pages. It's 8.5 by 11 hardcover, and this is a reference book. Actually, both of them are. Because this one will assist you in government by consent from the perspective of building committees of safety, understanding the common law, understanding what government by consent really is. It's an unalienable right, and how to exercise it. But Court Access in the Common Law also worked with the course. I wrote the book, and then I wrote the course afterwards. And the course doesn't necessarily follow chapter by chapter. It's from a different perspective. But most everything that's in the course is in the book. And but it's a reference book. Okay, you use it as a reference book. And if you get into the course, you got all the downloads are in PDF and Microsoft Word. We have memorandums, all kinds of memorandums that you can use for all kinds of different cases. You just make it work for your case. And of course, we have a lot of different court cases that we share, or at least a few court cases. We have an IRS case. We have traffic court case. We have a non-judicial foreclosure court case. Those are the biggies. But again, you know, learning this stuff is really about reading. And reading all these papers that we've written and others, reading certain Supreme Court cases. I wouldn't go out to read a lot of them. I'll make references to different ones for the purpose of maybe laying out the meaning of a phrase or a word that's being applied in the court and how they need to take it. You know, all of this stuff really is reading is where your real education takes place, okay? Because you learn to write by reading these things. Now, you have to know the process. You have to know the procedure. And again, we teach that. It's all forms. It's in forms. You know, everything's done with forms anyway. And we've created our own forms also because we take things from a different direction. We're coming in from the common law perspective. We're not coming in from the statutory perspective. So, you know, all this stuff is put together in order to really build a common law case. Now, if you're going to go in and battle a court case, especially one that you potentially can be in problem because you may have to go to jail, let me ask you a question to begin with. Have you been indicted by a grand jury?
No. No, the cop submitted a criminal complaint.
Yeah, that doesn't mean...
three stupid counts, and they don't even make sense. It's all, like, I was sitting on the side of the road with no gas. I was in my car, not even driving. And, like, he came up to me, and, you know, that's truly the truth, but he doesn't write that down and doesn't explain it like that, you know. And
Let me explain something here. The cop is a corporate officer. He works for a corporation in a municipality. What was it, town or village or city?
It's the municipal city of Naperville, Illinois.
So you're in a city court.
Okay.
I'm asking, are you in a city court? What kind of court are you in?
It's the 18th Judicial Circuit Court.
Okay, so it sounds like it's something with the state. You're in a state court. It's very surprising you'd be in a state court. I know how New York works. You know, New York is pretty... set and cut and dry. I mean, you know, we have the village courts, the town courts, we have the city courts, we have traffic courts in the cities particularly, and then there's the state court. In our state, it's called the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court of Dutchess County, the Supreme Court of Orange County, the Supreme Court of whatever the counties, the 62 counties in New York. So every county has a Supreme Court, a place where it's a state court, and it would in that particular county, so it's called that particular state court. And then after that, of course, you have the appellate court, the Court of Appeals, and then you can also move into the federal and go up to the United States Supreme Court if it's necessary. But here's the key thing, okay? If they're operating under statute, number one, it has nothing to do with you. Being able to defend this and really be able to, you have to have some knowledge here. You have to know how it all works. So you have to really dig down deep and start learning. You know, I learned the basic structure in 3 days. I took a course called jurisdictional. Goodness, what's the name of it? Eric, what's the name of that?
Jurisdictionary.
Jurisdictionary. Thank you. I took a course called Jurisdictionary, and there was a lawyer that taught that course. And when I took it, everything was downloadable. Right now, I see that the course is all up on online, and I think that controls you from constantly renewing every year. So he's making more and more money off people that are staying in his course. But when I took it, everything was downloadable. And so I downloaded everything, and 1 weekend I started on a Friday, and I went all the way through to Sunday, just focusing all day long and in the evenings, just going through to try to understand. So through that, I came to understand the basic structure, how things work and the forms and what's required. I had a lot of blank spots, and I didn't have the common law in there yet, but I had the process, and that's the key first thing to learn is the process. We do teach that. Was in the beginning of our course, the process. And first, we bring an introduction and to understand the common law, to understand positions and what is justice and what is law, the difference between law and equity and so on and so forth. But you can go through this course relatively quickly. It's 90 hours, and you can get through it in a month if you wanted to. But once you get through it, then you want to take those MP3s. And you want to put them in and play them from beginning to end over and over and over again to keep it in your brain, to refresh you, to make it part of the structure of your brain. Of course. But anyway, going into these courts, if you're potentially facing a jail sentence, which DUIs and driving under the influence, whatever, all of those are cases potentially that could put you in jail. Of course, it would just be a fine. I don't know. If you can get away with it, I would pay it and deal with it.
Yeah. I've asked twice to the attorney, well, what is the penal sum? What is the amount? Let's just settle this. And he goes, you can't do that. And I was like, yes, you can. And we weren't seeing eye to eye. And he was just trying to conspire with the prosecutor to set me up to take some course. And what it did was make them say, oh, you're a high-risk person. I have to do 30 hours community service. And I go, what? And they wanted me to come sign this thing. So that's where I put the UCC code, whatever, under this.
Hold on. Yeah. Are you saying that you could get out of this thing by doing 30 hours and maybe a fine or something? Is that something you're saying you can get out of or you can't get out of?
He said, well,
let me tell you.
I don't trust the lawyer, so he's done, right?
No. And let me tell you the problem here. If you're going to go in to battle this thing, you really need to be, because this is something that is concerning. You're facing potential jail sentence, okay? So that's concerning. It's not like it's a regular traffic violation in the worst case. You can really piss them off really bad, and they get all upset and angry with you and everything else. But at the end of the day, they can only give you a fine. Okay, so you're not facing something that's dramatic, that's really, that can injure you bad. In this case here, if you're going to go in with the common law and you're going to ruffle some feathers and hold some hard positions and hold their feet to the fire, and they're going to start to feel threatened, if you don't win that case, you really need to know what you're doing and when to win that case. I hear all these people online that teach some of these things, and it's like, oh, it's real easy, it's slammed, and people just get more and more trouble. They don't know how to handle the things as it comes along. They can't articulate themselves well enough. They can't defend themselves well enough. They don't understand the things, what's going on, and what they're really doing. You have to understand what their powers and authorities or their violations that they do. One of the things I would do if I were you is I'd try to sit in on every court case, especially one that deals with DWIs, when you find out to get the court records of what's going on and find out when these cases are being heard and go in and sit down and just listen. If the judge ever asks you, who are you? What are you doing here? Well, I'm just learning. I want to listen. That's all. But the thing is you can start to see what's going on, the game that's being played, what the opportunities are. If you can get out of here with doing some community time and a fine, I would do it. Then if you want, you can go back and sue them because now you're not in jeopardy anymore of jail. But you got to be careful if you're going to go in and try to kick their rear end. And it can be done. And first of all, you're looking at due process. They're bringing statutes. Statutes do not give you due process. If there is no indictment, then there is no case. I'm under law. And you can always move things into federal court for cause, for denial of due process, or denial of any of your rights, So, again, this is why people that are hearing this, they need to be thinking about educating themselves now, even though they don't have a problem, because one day they may have a problem, and they have to be able to deal with that problem. And also, if you want to sue somebody because someone damaged you, you need to know how to do it, and you need to know how to win. And you're right. Lawyers will throw you to the lions in a minute, and they owe more allegiance to the court than they do to you. And they will obey the court before they'll obey the Constitution, and surely before they obey you. So, big problem.
Yeah. Doesn't that go against their oath? Because I went and got copies of both, and it's true. They hide everything. But the clerk of court, I got her oath and bond. The judge, I got the oath. I've been trying to get the police officer, because that's who I have the real problem with, because I wasn't even driving. I wasn't even moving.
Well, let's go back to the police officer. First of all, there's no affidavit, okay? They a piece of paper, they write down and they put the code numbers. It's statutory. It's a problem. It doesn't have anything to do with you. You have to understand that and how to defend against that, number one. Number two, you have to understand, he's sworn at the end, but there's no affidavit. He didn't swear before a notary or a judge, and they will not do that, okay? They will not do that. So they didn't even open a lawful case because a case can't be opened without an affidavit. So there is no affidavit in court. That's another thing. They're coming out of tax. It's another thing. This cop is not a. It doesn't have the power or the authority to arrest you anyway. Okay, they can only make a citizen's arrest. How is that? Because they work for a corporation. They're a corporate officer. They have nothing to do with we the people. That's and they're applying municipality law. Municipality law ultimately it boils down. It goes to Roman law, Justinian law, leads right over into Babylonian law. It's the law of the city, the law of the municipalities, which is the law of the city. The purpose is to control and enslave the people and to, you know, just take their money, you know, to destroy them in any way they can, because that's the purpose of the whole thing. Now, mm-hmm. If you have a sheriff that understands this and is working with other sheriffs and working and the people are backing them and they feel that they have the backbone to be able to do anything, they can prevent all this from happening. Okay, they can refuse taking in prisoners, number one, because you see, when you get arrested and you're taken to a county jail, that county jail is supposed to be run by the sheriff and his deputies, and they have the power to finally make the final arrest because they're law enforcers. They're not code enforcers. And yet they're enforcing codes when they shouldn't be enforcing codes. They should not be accepting a lot of these people who were brought to the prison because they did not have due process. Due process, you know, we get a court of law. Now, a court of law is a court of record, and you look into your constitution, it'll tell you what state, in your state, it'll tell you what courts of record in your state. But that court of record also operates under equity. And once mm-hmm. you go to that court, if they're operating under equity, which is legislative law, has nothing to do with you. And they'll always operate under that, by the way. They don't operate under common law because they claim to have abrogated the common law. And that happened in 1934 Rules Enabling Act, and in 1938, that's when they abrogated the common law by rule. They also abrogated the power and the authority of the sovereign's writs. We have numerous writs. We can write writs of error, and we have power of writs of error, enforcement power, and yet they've abrogated that. They've taken that away from us. Now, the state courts, I don't think, understand that. Federal courts, they apply that. It's in their rule. But you don't see such rules in the state level, so you can make the application. I just did a writ of error, matter of fact, in one of our court cases. And now I'm waiting for the response on that. We did it with power and authority. So, again, you know, it's not as easy as a lot of these people say. But anyway, they need to. And the best place to test this out and to learn is in traffic court. Because, again, the worst case scenario is you fail and you have to pay a fine, and it could be $50, $100, $150, $200, whatever it is. I don't know. I know DWIs. I have friends that are DWIs. It's been a while, but many years back. And I know they were giving them like $500 fine. And, you know, you can go to jail on that too. But nevertheless, I've seen $500 fines and then some, you know, community service, 20, 30 hours of community service or something like that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know.
Well, I think that's what the lawyer was trying to say, that he could do or negotiate. I go, yeah, but that's going to be on my record. I don't even have a speeding ticket on my record. Like, I wasn't even driving. I go, you're not even defending me.
Look, one of the things you have to do is do an affidavit. You have to make all the stuff points on the affidavit. You have to be on point, just the facts, nothing else but the facts. You don't interpret it. You don't write law in it. You just write, this is what happened. You know, I was sitting in my car. This cop pulls up to me, does this, that, or the other thing, gives me a ticket for this, but I was parked. I wasn't going anywhere, wasn't doing anything, whatever the case
may
be.
I had my hazard lights on, and I was in one lane, and there was a whole other lane. I wasn't blocking anything. And so, yeah, and I know. That's where
did they give you a blood test or a blood test or anything?
Blood test, no.
I mean, what they give you driving under the
The breathalyzer, because he was giving me such a hard time, and it's like 30-degree weather. I was sitting outside, and I was cold, and I had high heels on because I did go to, a work event earlier that night, not at that time, like hours before. And anyways,
all right, well,
he wanted me to, you know, do the field sobriety, like walk one foot in front of the other. And I go, I can't even walk in my heels. Like, my feet are ice cold. And give me the breathalyzer.
That's not a good test either. You know, some people don't have good balance. You know, when you hit a certain age, and it's different for different people, you know, unless they have medical
balance.
Or, you know, people hit 50s, 60s, or 70s, whatever the case may be, at some point you start to lose your balance. And to walk that line that way under certain, you know, that's problematic. Okay, it doesn't really prove anything. The breathalyzer could be a problem. But in any event, look, you need to get as much time as you can. You need to delay this as much as you can. You know, you have to ask the judge for at least 60 days if possible. They may only give you 30, but 60, I got to find someone to help me. I need a lawyer or somebody, you tell them, and, you know, then you got to go through the case. And, you know, so they'll give you more time, but, you know, you try to get as much as you can. Get your education as much as you can. But, again, you know, you really have to focus in and understand what's going on, you know. I even look up the judges. You can run online and look up the judges and get all kinds of reports and different things that people say about this judge or that judge. You'll get a report even from the court itself. You can find all this stuff online. So you have to understand the judge, you know, who that judge is. And you have to understand the process. But with that, we got to move on. I think.
Yeah, thank you.
We're at midnight, and we're supposed to close at 11. But we still have people in the queue, but it's late. We're going to close down. And if people get into the queue early next week, we'll pick up the questions you have tonight or maybe questions we'll have for next week. And again, next week we will be looking in. Our topic for next week will be approaching the sheriff and taking back with the sheriff, how to take their work with that sheriff, taking back our schools, counties, towns, villages, and cities. It could be done without the sheriff, but it's much more powerful, 100 times more powerful if you have the sheriff working with you on this. And they will if they educate themselves, because they'll come to understand the power and the authority of the people and the problem and the difference between law and equity. And by the way, you can let your sheriff know, you know, first of all, we do have a, under our sheriff's tab here, we have a tab, join our campaign for constitutional sheriffs. You should get your sheriff a copy of the book, Government by Consent. Once you get communicating with the sheriff, you let them know if they come here to nationallibertyalliance.org and they sign up as a sheriff or a deputy, Jan will make contact with them one way or the other. I haven't discussed this on how we'll go with this, but we'll make contact with them. But we will give them free access to court access in the common law to any sheriff and any deputy. We might even consider police officers, but again, they are a corporate police. I don't know whether it's going to benefit anything, we'll be able to do anything about it, because they either got to obey their boss, which is a corporate boss, and if they don't, they'll get fired. So, all right, and also, we also have, again, I'd like to invite people to our Bible studies Wednesday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Time, right here in this room, for anyone interested. With that, good night, everybody. And I apologize I'm able to get to everybody in the queue. We've got about 5 people still there, but we'll talk next week, maybe. Good night, everybody. Thanks for coming.